From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Opening half mile in 49 seconds and just drawing clear to the line. Day at the Spa, Queen for a Day at Keeneland. She has won the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup in front-running style for Javier Castellano.
Here comes Dreampiece roaring down the center of the course. I'm a Dreamer trying to hold on. Dreampiece, Miss Keller, three of them in a heart-stopping finish. Picture time! Was it Miss Keller, I'm a Dreamer, or Dreampiece in a three-horse win photo in the E.P. Taylor Stakes?
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Sturdicus, a heart the size of the grandstand, true to tradition. Here comes Roast the Cat. What a finish! True to tradition, and Roast the Cat in a stirring photo finish in the New Arctic.
Rushing fall with Missy on Impossible right alongside Nialetti. His needing running room has to switch lanes toward the outside. Rushing fall responding to the challenge of Missy on Impossible, who's not throwing in the towel yet. Rushing fall with the lead by a length, chased all the way to the line by Missy on Impossible. Rushing fall prevails in the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup presented by Lane's End for Javier Castellano.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched a network. It is the Equine Forum, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Well, the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series has come to a close, at least here in the United States. There are still two more spots to be earned later today with a pair of win-in-your-ins at Ascot. You have the Champion Stakes for the Breeders' Cup Turf, and you have the Queen Elizabeth II Stakes, which will see the winner punch their ticket to the FanDuel Mile if they so choose to make the trip across the pond. Ironically, that is not the only Queen Elizabeth II Stakes we're going to see later today. It is the only one which is part of the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, but don't discount the possibility that one of the 10 runners entered into the QE2 Stakes at Keeneland later today will make their next start where the turf meets the surf. And in case you're wondering, and I know many of you are, the Breeders' Cup is now just 20 days, 9 hours, and 47 minutes away. It's going to be here before we know it. And for the 15th consecutive year, I am extremely proud to be able to tell you that the Breeders' Cup runs right here, exclusively on HRRN. We will be there on-site at Del Mar beginning Tuesday, November 2nd, to kick off more than 15 hours of Breeders' Cup Week programming, which includes our multi-Eclipse Award-winning coverage of every Breeders' Cup race, both Friday and Saturday, and that's live on your radio or your streaming device. It's going to be a lot of fun to bring it your way. That leads me to today's poll question. I'm going to throw it out there a little bit earlier in the program here today because I want to make sure you have plenty of time to weigh in on this one. This poll question or question of the day, not so much a poll question, but it's more of a question of the day for this morning, presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most going into this year's event? It's going to be an open-ended question. I'm looking forward to hearing the responses at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or if you don't do social media, simply email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most going into this year's event? And there are going to be obvious answers, such as the horses who are leading their respective divisions. Nick's Go, Latruska, Essential Quality. I'm sure many of you will be impressed with what they did. But as is always the case, when you're talking about 14 divisions, there will be several horses who, even though they were impressive in their last one or two or maybe even their last three Breeders' Cup prep races, maybe they've been impressive all year long, they will be overlooked and they will fly under the radar when they get to Del Mar in 3 weeks. One of those horses that impressed me last weekend And my answer to today's question of the day, and by the way, a horse that could very easily get overlooked at Del Mar, is Blowout, winner of the Grade 1 First Lady at Keeneland last Saturday. It has always been extremely difficult to go wire to wire on the turf at Keeneland, let alone doing it in a field that included multiple Grade 1 winner Althika, who came into the First Lady a perfect 2-for-2 here in the United States and is a filly which many racing experts feel could be the leader in this division. She has certainly looked the part since coming to the United States. And I know she had traffic trouble at the top of the stretch last Saturday. Maybe this would be a whole different discussion had she gotten clear sailing, but maybe not. Take a look at Blowout's past performances. Really take a close look at them. And you're going to see a mare who not only utilizes her speed and routinely jumps out to the early lead, but you're going to see a mare who almost always digs in when challenged. No, she doesn't always win, but when she loses, it's usually by a razor-thin margin. And telling, you know, you look at those efforts and you look at the way she digs in the stretch when she is challenged. I mean, that tells me right there that she ain't going to shy away from a fight. This is what you want in a racehorse. And you can't measure the heart of a racehorse. Blowout is all heart. And if you're going to beat her, you better bring your A game. Because she'll be a tough out. Here is what her defeats have looked like in her last six starts. Second by a neck. Second by a neck. Second by a nose. That one, by the way, in the Grade 1 Matriarch at Del Mar last November, on the very same turf course she will compete on in 20 days. She then wins the Grade 2 Distaff Turf Mile at Churchill in her 2021 debut. She finished fourth against the boys in the four-star Dave. And now she wins the Grade 1 First Lady at Keeneland. Once again, in wire-to-wire fashion, not an easy thing to do on that turf course at Keeneland. So for me, when answering today's question of the day, I'll take Blowout as the horse who has impressed me the most in her Breeders' Cup preps. And I think you're going to get a very, very fair price on her in a few weeks. Should not be overlooked. Keeneland announcer Kurt Becker is going to join me in a few minutes after our first commercial break, and he's going to share his thoughts on last weekend's Winning Your In action. There was plenty to talk about. Looking forward to that conversation. I'm going to spend time talking about tomorrow's Grade 1 E.P. Taylor and Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes at Woodbine with the voice of Woodbine himself. That is Robert Geller. He will join me at 8:40 Eastern. 9 o'clock, former trainer Tevis McCauley, who is now the owner of Whitetail Heaven Outfitters in Nicholasville, Kentucky, is going to join me to handicap today's QE2 at Keeneland. 9:20, it is this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. 9:40, I will take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Neil Pessin. Great story. Last weekend he saddled Bell's the One, who ran huge in winning the TCA Stakes. That should be a fun conversation at 9:40. 10 o'clock, Sean Clancy goes in the room with steeplechase jockey Graham Waters. 10:25, Kurt Becker will take you on a stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, I welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin to the show for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. We will debate and talk about various different topics over the course of about 20 or 25 minutes in that segment today. So it's going to be a busy show, as always, and looking forward to talking about the Breeders' Cup. Let's face it, all eyes in the racing world right now focused on the Breeders' Cup, and happy to be able to kind of look back on some of the races that we've seen over the past couple of weeks and look ahead to races that are coming up that could potentially play into that Breeders' Cup picture. I'll kick it off with Kurt Becker when I return. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 17th, we have the Grade 1 E.P. Taylor Stakes and the Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
World Class Racing is back at Spectacular Santa Anita, and be sure to join us this weekend for a pair of Hillside Turf Stakes, the $100,000 California Distaff Handicap on Saturday, and the $100,000 California Flag Handicap on Sunday. Bring your little jockeys out each weekend to enjoy pony rides, inflatable jumpers, face painting, and more in our infield family fun zone. Fun zone tickets are available online at santaanita.com or in person. Infield admission is just $5, which covers parking in a racing program. Kids 17 and under are admitted free. And fans, join us each Friday as we offer free general admission and parking, along with $3 beers and $5 specialty cocktails to those 21 and over. You can also take a shot through closing day October 31st at a prize pool of $12,000 in our new Pick'em game by choosing a series of racing and sports props at santaanita.com/contest. First post time is at 1 o'clock.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Rattle and Roll is moving wide off the turn. Rattle and Roll, top of the short stretch to challenge. Classic Causeway, Cellar Tap third, Double Thunder is fourth, and still five lengths from the lead. Rattle and Roll into the final furlong of the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. Rattle and Roll, the advantage out to three lengths now. Double Thunder, Classic Causeway, then American Sanctuary, no catching. Rattle and Roll, Brian Hernandez Jr., to win it by five lengths on the line. Double Thunder was up for second. Classic Causeway third. American Sanctuary fourth. 1:43.78.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you back with me as we kick things off. Very busy morning over the course of the next 3 hours with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Got Kurt. We do. Kurt Becker, the voice of Keeneland, of course, a colleague of ours here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You just heard him with the call of Rattle and Roll, winning last Saturday's Claiborne Breeders' Futurity in impressive fashion. There were several impressive performances in the Bluegrass that will no doubt have a direct impact on the Breeders' Cup in just 20 days. And Kurt is here to kind of share his thoughts on what he saw through the binoculars from the announcer's booth at Keeneland last Saturday, last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Kurt, good morning, my friend.
Hey, Mike, good to be on the show with you.
Yeah, excited to hear your thoughts. I know that you're probably looking forward to a big weekend with the QE2 coming up later today, but boy, that Fall Stars weekend, every year we talk about it, that meet, the fall meet is front-loaded because of the Breeders' Cup, but every single year it just brings out all of the star power that we have in the equine industry.
It really does. We had 11 Breeders' Cup Challenge races altogether. And for the most part, they were pretty formful races. Seven of the 11 were won by post-time favorites. There weren't a lot of upsets. In fact, you had the stretch call there from the Breeders' Futurity when you're coming back out of the break. Rattle and Roll, who went off at 8-1, he was one of the exceptions to the rule. He was one of the outsiders that ended up pulling off a win. But those were the exceptions, not the rule. For the most part, most of those races pretty much went to form.
My question of the day that our listeners are weighing in on right now at HRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is, which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most? So which winner last weekend impressed you the most from what you saw?
You know, it's I'm laughing because the one that impressed me the most, it took me a few days to land on this one. And that was Latruska in the Spinster, because I was on HRRN a few days ago with Bobby Newman, and at the time I told Bobby, I said, you know, my first impression the day of the Spinster was that I thought she seemed a little dull. Well, I went back and looked at the stretch run of that race, and I've made up my mind she wasn't dull. She was bored. I just think that she was just so much the best in that race that she just she really just never was called on to do a whole lot because she didn't have to. If you go back and if you look at the gallop out from that race, when the camera zooms in on her, I mean she's just skipping along. Just you can just tell she's coming out of that race just like she's been out for a jog. I would call her deceptively good.
Yeah, she's certainly been impressive throughout her entire 2021 campaign. And that was, you know, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Nick's Go when he was running at Churchill Downs in the Lucas Classic, and he was an overwhelming favorite. And certainly Latruska was an overwhelming favorite in her race at Keeneland last Sunday. I think it was the ideal prep race for both of those horses because of the fact that, yeah, they were big favorites. Yes, they beat a field they were supposed to beat. But, Kurt, they did it and left something in the tank for the Breeders' Cup in 20 days.
I agree. I think that, you know, sometimes with horses that are headed for the Breeders' Cup, we've seen it over the years where they are called upon to fight so hard and they have to go into the reserves so deeply to win a challenge race that they come up empty or they come up a little short on Breeders' Cup weekend. But, I think that Latruska, I think she's coming into the Breeders' Cup in terrific fashion, and I think she got just what she needed here at Keeneland.
Friday was the opening day of the fall meet. Of course, it was the first of the three-day Fall Stars weekend, and we saw Juju's Map, the two-year-old daughter of Liam's Map, roll the victory in the Darley Alcibiades. And boy, she certainly looked like she could be any kind going forward, didn't she?
Yeah, she really did. And I think that if you're Brad Cox, you've got to be happy with the fact that she showed she can sit back and run at a target. When she broke her maiden, it was pretty much hammered down right to the front, lead all the way, and draw off. And I think one of the great things for her was when the run happy filly went out and went to the lead and set the pace and gave her a target to run after. And you know, then when she got the lead, when Juju's Map got the lead on the final turn, there was a filly in there that by the name of Matt Araya, who coming into the race, you know, breeding wise and based on her prior start, she looked pretty tough as well. And this filly just really shrugged her off when they got to about the quarter pole. So I think Brad's got a live one there, and he's done this before with British Idiom, has come through Keeneland, has come through the Alcibiades, and then gone on to have success and win a Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies race. I know that's there are some other fillies, particularly one on the East Coast, who's been pretty tough. But I think Brad's got a pretty good hand there with Juju's Map.
Yeah, that was the same day that we also saw a special reserve punch his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Sprint with a victory in the stall, Keenan Ogden Phoenix Stakes. And I don't know, Kurt, I don't know if this was the strongest renewal of the Phoenix that we've ever seen, but Special Reserve is a really good horse. It'll be interesting to see how he fares going forward to the Breeders' Cup when he gets to Del Mar.
Yeah, he is. First of all, I agree with you. It seems like as a general rule, the Phoenix has not been a race it's not had the kind of impact on the Breeders' Cup like some of the other fall stars weekend races. But with regard to Special Reserve, you know, he seems like a kind of a blue collar horse. He does not get talked about a lot. He doesn't do anything that's real flashy, but he always seems to get away from the gate well. He gets in good position. And if you go back and look, if you're a handicapper who likes speed figures, he seems to consistently throw out some speed figures that are pretty impressive. He just, you know, I think it's a year where there are other horses in that sprint division who are a lot flashier, get a lot more press, but he could be dangerous.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we've become accustomed to seeing names like Whitmore and Run Happy, and people forget Wise Dan actually ran in the Phoenix Stakes, believe it or not, sprinting on the dirt, and he won it in 2010. You know, it's a race that in the past has had some really big names. I'm not sure we had them this year, but then again, a Special Reserve wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint. We're saying, oh, geez, it had Special Reserve in the Phoenix this year.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, you're right. I think so often when and maybe it's because of the fact the Phoenix is not a grade one. It's a win and you're in, but it's not a grade one. And maybe that's one of the reasons sometimes we all tend to overlook that race as a prep for the Breeders' Cup. But grade two, grade three, doesn't matter. I mean, this time of year, any horse that wins a challenge race, you've got to respect that.
Yeah, and I'll say this, Kurt. I just happened to flip over and look this up. His final time of 108.54 is the fastest running of the Phoenix since 2008. So the time, very, very good.
Yeah, it really is. And I think, you know, sometimes we all go back and forth on how much does the final time matter. I think in this case it does, because when you're talking about sprint, goodness knows that's the whole point of that division is speed. And you think about California speed. You think about the fact that the sprint, the Breeders' Cup, is being held in California this year. I think this is one year where maybe a person needs to pay a little more attention to that.
One of the great storylines, by the way, visiting with Keeneland announcer Kurt Becker, he will be part of our coverage team as we bring you exclusive radio coverage of the Breeders' Cup World Championships Friday and Saturday, November 5th and 6th, for the 15th consecutive year. Kurt, you talk about Saturday's races, and Neil Pessin is going to join me coming up later in the show to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup, because he is going to the Breeders' Cup with Bells the One, who won the Thoroughbred Club of America. She'll be in the filly and mare sprint. And, you know, what a great storyline. And, you know, for Neil Pessin, kudos to him. He's one of the good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing.
He really is, and I'm tickled to hear that he has made that decision with Bells the One, because I know that when she won the Thoroughbred Club of America last weekend, he was reluctant to commit that day. He said, I'm not sure at this point if we're going to go, but he said, I'm glad he's going with her. And, you know, he commented on the fact he's been disappointed. He feels like that the public hasn't given that filly the respect that she deserves. And I always love that. I love how trainers go to bat for their horses. He really believes in this filly. And I think that Bob Losenbach, the owner, is a great story in the game. You know, Bob's a good reminder. In the sport of horse racing, let's never forget, we need every tier, every level of the industry. I grew up in central Illinois. I grew up around horsemen who would race at what was known at the time as Fairmount Park down near St. Louis. And, you know, Bob once went on record, the owner of Bells the One went on record one time, and he said, I'm from Minnesota. And he said, my home is just a few minutes from Canterbury Park. And he said, that's how I got interested in the game. He said, I had a track nearby. I started going to the races. I was just curious about it. So, you know, God bless the Canterbury Parks of the world. I mean, I've talked to friends about this before. Not every track can be Churchill, Keeneland, Santa Anita, Del Mar, what have you. And while we all appreciate those tracks, we all need to appreciate the fact we need the regional tracks. We need them all to make this sport work. And I think that Bob Lothenbach, the owner of Bells the One, is a good example of that.
Yeah, and I'll clean this up a little bit. I did say Bells the One going to the Breeders' Cup sprint, Filly and Mare Sprint. She is qualified by virtue of that victory. I'm going to ask Neil Pessin the question. I have not seen it publicly that he's definitely going, but I will ask him later in the program, and we'll find out for sure if she's on her way to Del Mar. It would certainly be one of the great storylines of the week, you know, going into the Filly and Mare Sprint for sure. How about the other turf races that we saw on Saturday? The Keeneland Turf Mile, which was won by In Love, the Brazilian bred, and then you had Blowout go wire to wire in the First Lady, which, Kurt, I said this at the top of the show, it is not easy to win wire to wire on that turf course at Keeneland, and to do it in a Grade One, ultra impressive.
You know, that's true. It's really tough to do. I mean, a lot of our featured turf races so far this meet have been won by horses coming from off the pace. Tis the Bomb did that on Sunday in the Bourbon Stakes. California Angel came from out of the clouds on the turf on Wednesday to win the Jessamine Stakes. You're absolutely right. And you look at Blowout. I tell you, the thing that's always tough for me about the First Lady, it's listed as a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf Division, but it's a race that's held at a mile, and the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf is at a mile and 3/8. So it's always tough for me to know how much the form out of the First Lady is going to translate to Breeders' Cup weekend. But you know, Chad Brown had a big day. He was 1-2 in that race. Regal Glory ran runner up, and I thought at one point Regal Glory was going to go on by this mare, but Blowout really turned in a pretty tough performance.
Yeah, very, very tough performance. I think, again, pertaining to that poll question, which horses impressed you most, I was very impressed by that effort, and she is a mare that always shows up and runs her race, and she's a tough out when she gets hooked in the stretch, and I think we saw that on Saturday. And again, In Love taking the Keeneland Turf Mile, really nice effort there, too.
It was, and I thought that might have been, from a human standpoint, that might have been the best story of Fall Stars weekend, talking about jockey Alex Achard. It was it was his first mount ever in a Grade One, and he ends up winning the race with In Love. And you know, that's a horse that's been on a pretty good roll lately. That horse has won three in a row now. I thought Alex did a good job. He managed to get over to the rail and he saved ground around the first turn, and really saved enough ground around the second turn as well. That I thought that played a big difference when he got out and got shook loose in the stretch. I think that played a factor in that stretch rally, because Alex did a nice job keeping that horse down to the inside and covered up and safe ground all the way.
Well, Kurt, you and I are going to be reunited once again for our coverage of the Breeders' Cup this year. I mentioned that earlier. Every Breeders' Cup race, Friday and Saturday, will be heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. 15th consecutive year we've been doing it, and man, I can't wait to bring our listeners all that coverage. It's always so much fun for those 2 days.
Very much looking forward to it, Mike. It's always a pleasure to be part of the crew with you and the entire HRRN family. It's a fun time of year. It's going to be here very, very soon, and I'm looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, Jude Feld will be with us again. That familiar voice, Bobby Newman, will be part of the coverage team, and we're trying to bring Jeff Bloom out of Mothballs, too, and get him back in the mix. Should be fun.
And you know, I think Jeff told me that Snapper Sinclair, who he owns, is headed for the Breeders' Cup. And that horse has been an old war horse. He's done a great job for Bloom Racing. So I know either way, Jeff's headed for a big weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Kurt Becker, the voice of racing at Keeneland here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget to stay with us at 10:25 Eastern, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History segment. Kurt, those are so fantastic. You've been putting those together all year long, and I know that we've received so much positive feedback on those stories. I for one, can't take off the headsets when they're on. I think they're fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm tickled that Lane's End and Keeneland have been on board with HRRN for those segments. And today it's California Flag. We're going to take a look back at the career of that West Coast sprinter.
Well, there it is. make sure that you're locked into that at 10:25. And, Kurt, I know you do an awful lot for the industry with the work that you do with the Keeneland sales team and, of course, all the announcing you do, and you do some work with the fair circuit and the harness races up in your home state of Illinois. So I thought it was appropriate that this interview be the Industry Star of the Week segment, and you are the Industry Star of the Week for this Saturday morning. Our good friend Stuart Morris sponsors this segment, and I couldn't think of anybody better here this morning to make our Industry Star of the Week. So congrats on that.
Well, Mike, I appreciate that. That comes as a surprise, and that means a lot. I tell you, there are so many folks out there behind the scenes who work so hard on a day-to-day basis. I tend to stay in bed and get up at about, usually I'm not up till about 9:30 a.m. on race day. So I will confess there are folks who work a heck of a lot harder than me and are more deserving, but it's an honor and I do appreciate it.
Yeah, certainly, my friend. Enjoy the races today. We'll look forward to hearing your calls.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be with you.
All right. Kurt Becker, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, that interview brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is indeed your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. All right, coming up next, it's a visit with Robert Geller. He will follow today's first bet, and we'll talk about Woodbine and the big day that they have going coming up tomorrow, and we'll look back on some of the win-and-your-ins that took place in September north of the border. That's ahead, but first, it's time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
This is the story of a thoroughbred who, without any reservation whatsoever, by name alone, conjures up images of greatness. The greatness and adulation of the American public that is reserved in the very front row of the heroes of sport, that horse was Seabiscuit. There are horses and there are horses, as the saying goes, and although all great horses are fast, not all fast horses are great. This horse is of very special significance because he was indeed one of a mere handful of the past 100 years who, through public adulation, became a true hero in the very ilk of the word itself. His story could well be the prototype of a Horatio Alger story, the consummate personification of the great American dream. In singular microcosm, he was what American racing is indeed all about. Seabiscuit was bred by the Wheatley Stable, foaled in 1933 at Claiborne Stud of Arthur B. Hancock. He was the son of Hardtack, out of Swing-On by Whisbroom II. As a yearling, he was shipped to Hialeah, along with several other yearlings, by the redoubtable Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons. On January 19, 1935, he went to the post as a two-year-old for the first time in a claiming event, in which he finished a nondescript fourth while earning $50. 3 days later, he ran on another claimer over a distance of 3 furlongs and finished second, beaten 2 lengths by a horse called Clapping Jane. Either Clapping Jane or Seabiscuit could have been claimed from that field for $2,500. Clapping Jane never won again and wound up in Puerto Rico as a broodmare. It took 18 races for Seabiscuit to find a field of horses he could finally beat. That race was at Narragansett Park in Rhode Island for a purse of $750 on June 22, 1935. He then won the Watch Hill Claiming Stakes, named for the posh Rhode Island resort, for which he banked $2,800. He won 4 claiming races and was nearly claimed by Hirsch Jacobs in the process, but Jacobs felt he had highly suspicious knees. If only he knew what he had passed up at the time. Seabiscuit was sold in August of 1936 as a 3-year-old to Mr. Charles S. Howard for $7,500, and an association was born with that is legendary. The purchase was made on the advice of Silent Tom Smith, who, while looking over Seabiscuit, remarked there was, quote, a look of the eagles, unquote, in him. It took Seabiscuit until the Brooklyn Handicap at the age of 4 to exhibit his championship mettle. From that race on, he was sensational. There were 3 occasions, subsequently, wherein he was defeated through the efforts of a jockey named Nick Wall. Wall got his mount through a hole left on the rail by the Biscuits rider Red Pollard to win by a whisker in the Bowie Handicap at Pimlico in 1937. In the 1938 Santa Anita Handicap, Seabiscuit, carrying 130 pounds, had too much taken out of him by rider Georgie the Iceman Wolf, and Wall brought Stagehand from off the pace for a win. and in 1939 when Wall piloted Today to another win over the Biscuit. Seabiscuit finally realized C.S. Howard's fondest dream by winning a Santa Anita handicap on his third try in 1940 when Red Pollard again had the mount. That was a well-chronicled, well-remembered race in which two superb athletes, both in the twilight of careers, both horse and rider, went out in a blaze of glory before an adoring public. It was the way the script should end, the stuff of a Frank Capra film. Seabiscuit was a failure at stud, but he retired from the racing wars as the world's leading money-winning thoroughbred. From an initial purse of $50 in 1935 and a meteoric rise to success, he was the very fiber of the lore, legend, and mystique of thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
The 12 is four lengths behind and is starting to rain ground on them now. Out in front, Muta Makina from Al Nassim, and here comes a 12 down the outside. Out in front, Muta Makina being targeted by a 12. And down the outside, Mevier and Court Return. Muta Makina in front, a 12 is all out in second, and then Mevier. Muta Makina, Muta Makina's got it won. Muta Makina in the dance smartly. Quarters to a 12. Mevier third, Court Return fourth. Behind them was Blaine Debbie, and at the back, a Fleet Catherine and last, Al Nassim.
That is the voice of Woodbine, Robert Geller, with the call of the Grade 2 Dance Smartly at Woodbine on August 22nd. Huge effort from Muta Makina, defeating Etoile and several other top runners who will all meet again in tomorrow's Grade 1 E.P. Taylor. That's going to be a fantastic race. Robert's going to join me momentarily right after we get you set to bet the races, and we do that with this week's edition of today's First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes at Gulfstream Park in race 6, 3:30 Eastern is the post. It's number 3, Acting Lucky, who is 3-1 on the morning line, has a 28% win projection from First Bet, ranks 10 points higher than the next closest rival, is number 1 rated in 4 of the top 9 most important First Bet handicapping factors for the race, and has been first or second in 5 straight races. Plus, the speedster should appreciate 5 furlongs on the Tapita. And as an added bonus, jockey Rajiv Miraj has been red hot over the past week at Gulfstream. Number 3, Acting Lucky, in race 6 at Gulfstream, is today's First Bet. I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, there will no doubt be plenty of bets flowing at Woodbine tomorrow, even today, but certainly tomorrow with the big Grade 1 E.P. Taylor and the Grade 2 New Arctic. It's an 11-race program, and Robert Geller is the voice of Woodbine. He joins us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, we heard the call of Muta Makina winning the dance smartly over at Etoile, and they will get a rematch in the E.P. Taylor. That is one solid renewal coming up tomorrow afternoon.
Very exciting race. We see a number of different faces coming in for this one, and I thought it was a good challenge by those races in terms of where the horses were at in terms of grade levels. But I did think Muta Makina was very strong that day. Etoile seemed to be just a little slow at making that run at her, but the shippers coming in are going to be very intriguing. We've got so many faces that line up. Chad Brown's got a couple of new faces that are very interesting, and I certainly know the British horses and the French representative add some flavor to this race, which will be a run on a wet track. I mean, we're going to have, unfortunately, a lot of rain today and maybe some more tomorrow. So it's been already a yielding surface, the E.P. Taylor track. So for the E.P. Taylor stakes, I do think we're going to need to have a horse that can handle heavy going.
Which horse in the E.P. Taylor strikes you as a horse that would benefit from a softer ground?
Well, I know that the very inside runner definitely handles that. I don't know how good the British horse is. That is, you know, Waliak is a horse that seems to me may just be a cut below in class for what the opposition is, but has an incredible record on wet turf. So in terms of whether that's enough to bring this horse forward, Roger Varian's the trainer, and definitely Le Havre, the sire, everything points to that horse handling it very well. I am not necessarily sure with some of them because, you know, we've had a couple that have been proven to some extent on it. I thought California Queen's wet turf form was decent, and I wouldn't be surprised if Family Way, you know, also picked up a bit more ground on a wet track. But I don't really know until, you know, I see it, because only that particular runner stands out, the inside one. It's a mudlark.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Etoile, I mentioned, defeated by Muta Makina in her previous start, and that was the Grade 2 Dance Smartly. She is the morning line favorite over Muta Makina and everybody else, even though Muta Makina beat her last time. Is that surprising to you, Robert? Do you see that as a bit of a head-scratcher, or is she just that good where she should be favored again?
No, I'm not sold on the morning line. I'm really not. I think it's a little bit hard to gauge this particular race. I know that people have a sentimental feeling for Etoile, who's, you know, been successful in this race before, but I did think she was fair and squarely beaten. Muta Makina's in very good form, but I think both of them might be challenged because, you know, they've both had previously been behind horses that others have done better against, such as Mean Mary. And, you know, if you've got the very in-form Great Island and California Queen, who I think will test both of them, I would not be surprised to see that they get a lot of action because of the Chad Brown factor as well, who's had success, but not necessarily booming success this year when he's brought horses. And I think there'll be a lot more money for Le Dragon T than the 8-1 morning line. This was a very impressive winner. She really looked good, even though she mightn't necessarily have taken on as strong a field when she was the winner of the Canadian Stakes over Court Return, but she looked very solid in her sweeping finish, and she's got the benefit of racing recently on the track, so I think she'll attract money. Joel Rosario always gets support when he rides here, but I do think that the Burning Lion may be very different. We've, you know, certainly got the wet track factor, and we'll just see what happens as the day unfolds there, but I don't necessarily think Etoile will be as short a price as is expected. I might be wrong on that.
Tomorrow's EP
Tyler Ortiz, of course, won the Queen's Plate, and people love that.
Yeah, exactly. Tomorrow's EP Tyler, Robert, is actually the third and final leg of Woodbine's Ladies of the Lawn series, which was launched in 2019. It kicked off on August 22nd with the Dance Smartly. Again, Muta Makina was the winner. And then La Dragon Tea, who you just talked about, won the Grade 2 Canadian Stakes. Court Return is also back in the EP Tyler tomorrow. And those three are tied at the top of the standings for that Ladies of the Lawn bonus, which would go to the owner. The one with the most points at the end of this is going to get a $50,000 bonus paid to them. So the stakes are pretty high in tomorrow's EP Tyler.
They are, and it's traditionally such a solid race. I mean, it's exciting for us to have, you know, the three Chad Brown runners, including Etoile, but it's also, you know, the fact that they've come back. Muta Makina chose to come back. The owners are back. Christophe Clément with La Dragon Tea's owners as well. So, you know, those stables supporting it is terrific. And the fact that we've got, you know, a couple of unknown horses who are having Keyflowers having her first lifetime start in North America in Woodbine. And that's terrific. Even though she's a three-year-old, you know, we're excited to see those faces. And there's the locals who you never know. And Kentucky Downs Sork Family Way Run. So Brendan Walsh has been a tremendous supporter. These owners, yeah, there's some money on the line for those top, you know, standings. And it's, you know, it's going to be a tactical race. I'm just not clear. You know, there's no standout because you could argue many cases in this race, which makes it very interesting for the bettors.
How about from the announcer perspective, when you have a race that's this wide open, you're not looking at one single horse like a Wise Dan, for example, that's expected to dominate the race. You have to kind of,
right.
You know,
that's
you're always
right.
paying attention to everyone, but does it change your approach when you're getting ready to call it?
I suppose it's, in some ways, subconsciously, it does, because what you find is you're very present. You're not necessarily as focused on, oh, I'm expecting, you know, this particular runner to make a certain style of race. And, you know, there are certain patterns to horses, like we saw with Town Cruise winning in the Rika Woodbine Mile. There was expectation on the horse taking the lead, not necessarily on winning. There's horses who, like Dragon Tea last start, you know, she was expected to really win, so I had my eye on her. But you never want to do that, really, as an announcer. You just want to be so present that even all the information that you've, you know, absorbed prior to a race and talked about and divulged, you try and forget it, because as soon as that gate opens, you want to stay right in the action and almost discard what you know, unless it starts to really show that something like an Etoile is going to win, where you bring in that information right then. But otherwise, no. And I've looked at the replays. I've gone through them. I've seen Great Island's type of style. It was very different in the previous run to the second last start. I've seen a couple of them, California Queen. Very interesting. But, you know, we had some great lead-up races, and they're in my mind. But I'm not going to let it influence the way I call it.
Visiting with Woodbine announcer Robert Geller here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, huge day at Woodbine tomorrow. The Grade 1 EP Tyler, which will go as race number 8, 437 Eastern is the post. Race number 10 is the Grade 2 Nearctic. And, Robert, you just referred to Town Cruise, who won the Woodbine Mile in his most recent start. He is back in the Grade 2 Nearctic for trainer Brandon Greer. He is also the owner. He and his dad are a fantastic story. It's a family affair. He was on the show with me right after that win, and it is one of the great storylines surrounding this weekend's racing at Woodbine.
It really is, and, you know, it was one of the great training feats as well, because there's a horse that, you know, has been sort of cuddled along because there were some issues in the interim and could have dropped down the class ladder. This horse always showed potential, always showed a naturally big stride, a bold type of front-running a chestnut who was an eye catcher early in the career and finally put it all together this season, and admittedly did have a sort of lone speed lead. We're coming back in distance, and there's going to be pressure on this horse, in which will be a much tougher speed battle. And I'm not sure if this is going to translate quite as easily, because you know, Pound Cruise is really a bit of a miles specialist, or around that distance where that speed is not as likely to be challenged at that level of pressure. But it will come into a different story with Momos in this race, and horses that could possibly really come from the back closing in a much more vigorous style, because this race has traditionally been a little bit of an upsetter. And I think that Reconfigure will also be a pace horse in the race, but definitely Town Cruise is in peak form, has been beautifully prepared. I think it's a good move to stay at Woodbine rather than take on what would have been a very tough mile in the Breeders' Cup, even though it's tempting to pay the $100,000. There was some, you know, variance in thought there, but I think they're back to the original first instincts.
Yeah, and for a small operation, this certainly makes sense, and nothing wrong with getting a victory in the Grade 2 in the Arctic if indeed Town Cruise can pull it off tomorrow afternoon. Let's look back for a minute before I let you go, Robert, on a couple of win-in-your-in races that were contested in September. You had the Woodbine Mile. We just talked about Town Cruise. He won that race on September 18th, but the next day was all about the juveniles. You had the Natalma for the two-year-old fillies, and then you had the Summer Stakes as well. Tell me about those two races.
You know, Wild Beauty was so visually impressive in the Natalma. I was absolutely taken with her win. Pizza Bianca was a little held up in that race. Subsequent to Wild Beauty's win in the Natalma Stakes, she went back to Newmarket and did run. I thought, you know, I looked at the replay of that. It was a bit 365 strong field. I think the favorite's going on to be favorite for the 1,000 guineas. But she ran up on the pace uphill. She didn't run the same style as where she ran at Woodbine. And if she goes to the Breeders' Cup and runs to the form of the Natalma Stakes, she would be really hard to beat. She was just sensational in her turn of foot. And I think that she really has talent. Pizza Bianca was actually a pretty unlucky run. I don't think she was ever going to get the winner, but she ran a really good race. At the top of the lane, she was cut off and she closed ground. They came well clear of the opposition. So I think that Wild Beauty caught my eye the most that day. But in the, you know, the Summer Stakes, I thought that the win by Alba was pretty efficient. I mean, both Wild Beauty and Alba missed the start quite dramatically. Frankie Dettori won both. This was a very impressive win, too. I wasn't as taken as was with Wild Beauty, but on reflection, Grafton Street, who ran second, closed a ton of ground. The Mark Cassie bandwagon really has been strong at Woodbine this year. Ran a good race to win recently, and they put Grafton Street, who's also coming into the Breeders' Cup, on the lead on the main track, and put that horse through pretty fast fractions early in a completely different style, almost as if it's a prep for Del Mar, and I thought it was a very good, honest run. So those two horses really ran well. We also had, in the Patterson Canadian International, a huge win by Walton Street, who's, you know, potentially going to run. I wouldn't be surprised if that horse, you know, is up against Mishriff again, and that would be hard, but that is an interesting element too for Godolphin. There was also a horse called Derry Nain, who was impressive in the Woodbine Care Stakes, who's potentially going to the Juvenile Turf Sprint. This will be a tougher assignment, but was easily the best that day. But Wild Beauty caught my eye. If she goes to the Breeders' Cup, I'm having my money on her, even though I was disappointed that they ran her in the UK. I thought she should have gone straight to it because, I mean, you know, to see a form line detract is a disappointment coming in, but she's very talented, and she took on some tough ones that day.
You know, one of the best in the business, Robert Geller, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Robert, really appreciate the time, and you're always very generous when I reach out to you and ask you to join me on the program, and want to wish you all the best coming up tomorrow with that E.P. Taylor card. Can't wait to hear your calls.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the visit. Robert Geller here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, I'll get you ready for hour number two, which promises to be equally as busy as the first hour of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksAndSeafood.com.
We have the world at our fingertips, inspiration in our touch, and power in our hands. Our hands, gentle enough to hold the next generation, yet strong enough to build movements that can change the world. Our hands can build relationships, frame ideas, and empower communities. We have the ability to share and imagine, create and comfort, love and heal the world around us. And it doesn't stop there. Right here, in our hands, we have the power to save a life. If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest. The power is in your hands. Anthem Foundation is the proud national supporter of the American Heart Association's Hands Only CPR campaign.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Get expert handicapping advice with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on HRRN. Bobby Newman will take an in-depth look at the weekend's biggest races to help you solve your handicapping puzzle. Whether you're a casual fan or a hardcore bettor, the Weekend Stakes Preview has you covered. Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming at horseracingradio.net.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
A little over 2 furlongs to go, and the Tattersall's Irish 1,000 guineas, and it's No Speak Alexander trying to shrug off Joan of Arc. Then Fantasy Lady, who stays on. Pretty Gorgeous is ground to find. And then Empress Josephine Bellemage runs on the outside. Up the rail is Friendly. No Speak Alexander, repressed by Joan of Arc on the near side. Joan of Arc and Ryan Moore get to No Speak Alexander and Shane Foley. Here's Empress Josephine with a sail on the near side. Joan of Arc, Empress Josephine. As they have delivered Aidan O'Brien. He's 10th. Tattersall's Irish, 1,000 guineas.
Well, that's the way it sounded back on May 23rd. Huge, huge win at the Curragh for Empress Josephine, who we saw in action last weekend at Keeneland. That was in the Grade 1 First Lady, won by blowout. Empress Josephine was third in that race, was closing well under Hall of Famer John Velasquez. She is entered in today's QE2 Challenge Cup, right back 7 days later. She could be a handful later today. She's 3-1 on the morning line. And when you talk about the connections that have had success in the QE2, it starts first and foremost with the Hall of Famer John Velasquez. He has won more runnings of the Queen Elizabeth II than any jockey in the history of the sport. His first one coming all the way back in 1995. Should make that a trivia question. Could you name the first QE2 winner for John Velasquez in 1995. I'll give you a hint. The trainer shares the same last name as I do. Angel Pena Jr., John Velasquez teamed up to win in 1995 with Perfect Arc, who was sensational throughout her career. And boy, so many good horses have come through that QE2. We're going to talk more about that coming up in the second hour of the program. Recently I have been telling you about the new Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. I told you I was down there a couple of weeks ago, picking up some boots and some shirts and things like that, getting ready for the season. And if you are interested in hunting or fishing or just the outdoors, whatever it might be, stop by and see them. They're in Nicholasville, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, the elite outdoor superstore, has everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And hoping to be joined by Tevis to kick off the second hour of the program here in just a few minutes. But he is a busy man, and he is out on his farm. In addition to the superstore, he has a farm where people come from all over the country, all over the world, to hunt. And he had to take somebody out hunting this morning. So depending on their success, it'll determine whether he can be here in the next couple of minutes. I will let you know shortly, but somebody who is going to, if he is here, handicap that QE2 for you. As a former horse trainer and as somebody who follows the game very closely, he will be excellent in that regard. So hoping he can join us. Coming up at 9:20, it will be Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. I'm going to recognize Keeneland starter Jeff Powell. That should be a fantastic conversation coming up at 9:20. And then Neil Pessin going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with me at 9:40 Eastern, talking about Bell's the One, an impressive winner of the Thoroughbred Club of America. And we'll ask Neil if they have indeed made a decision on going to the Breeders' Cup with Bell's the One. That's all ahead. Two more hours to go. Hour two is next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron in the backstretch. Two more hours to go on this Saturday morning. That third hour loaded, too. Don't forget, it wraps up with this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkins. So many topics that we're going to debate. I'm going to ask them, you know, there are so many. Today is National Sports Day, which I think is appropriate because there are so many big sporting events going on across the country in every sport. You have Major League Baseball with the playoffs. You have the NHL. You have college football going on. You have the NFL tomorrow, the PGA Tour. Everything is in full swing. And, of course, the road to the Breeders' Cup, which is, I know, wrapping up, at least in terms of the Breeders' Cup Challenge races, but you have plenty of good racing left over this weekend and the coming weekends leading into Breeders' Cup. But I'm going to ask them, in light of the fact that this is National Sports Day, I'm going to ask them about the big matchup with number one Georgia taking on number 11 ranked University of Kentucky at 3:30 Eastern today, because that's a huge deal here in the Bluegrass. But I'm going to spin it around and ask them, if you could pick one horse that would represent Georgia, who, by the way, is about a 22-point favorite later today, and one horse that would represent Kentucky, who, like Georgia, is also undefeated, 6-0, but a massive underdog, regardless of all the success that they have had. And if you could pick one horse that would be Georgia, and you could pick one horse that would represent Kentucky in a matchup like that, if it was a match race, who would those horses be? Really interested to hear their answers. That will be one of the questions I will ask them at 10:30 Eastern in this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Sean Clancy and his In the Room conversation comes up at 10 o'clock Eastern. He sits down with Steeplechase jockey Graham Waters, and at 10:25, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. He talks about the career of California Flag. That should be really good, too. So all kinds of things coming up. Was hoping to be joined in this segment by Tevis McCauley from Whitetail Heaven Outfitters. Told you that a few moments ago, but unfortunately it looks like he is going to be in the deer blind this morning, so won't be making it to talk about the QE2. So I'll share my thoughts on that race here in just a minute. But I want to update you on the question of the day, which you can weigh in on HRN, on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network, on Facebook. The question of the day presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most going into this year's event? And I want this to be an open-ended question like this, because there are so many different angles you could take. Robert Geller, you heard him just a short time ago talking about the Winning Your In races at Woodbine and how impressed he was with Wild Beauty in the Natalma Stakes. Really caught his eye. That was on September 19th. Kurt Becker, when I asked him that question in the first hour of the program, he said he was most impressed with Latruska. And you can certainly see that. His take, though, was very interesting to me. And if you haven't gone and watched that race yet, go back and watch it. The Grade 1 Spinster from last Sunday at Keeneland. She wins very, very easy. And Kurt said it wasn't as if she wasn't running hard. He said it looked to him, as he's calling the race, like maybe she was bored. And I thought that was a really interesting take. Because she's so good, and she was such a heavy favorite in that field, much like Nick's Go was at Churchill in the Lucas Classic. He said it looked like she was bored. And he said when you watch the gallop out, you can tell just how good she really is. I mean, we know Latruska is the real deal. There's no doubt about it. She is indeed the real deal. And she is, some people think, the best horse in the country. Forget about the best female horse. A lot of people feel like she may be the best horse, but she'll go in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. They're not going to take a shot at the Classic. Fausto Gutierrez was on the show with me last weekend, her trainer, and he told us that. But maybe Latruska is the horse that you, like Kurt Becker, feel has been most impressive. Double T says, Nick's Go. Saw the last two races live. Fast dude. Certainly is a fast dude. And Nick's Go looks to be set up perfectly for a run in the Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar. So let me know your thoughts. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you don't do social media, that's cool. Shoot me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. And let me know. Which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most going into this year's event? I told you at the top of the show, for me, it's Blowout. And I think it's a pretty easy call because of the fact that Blowout was so impressive in winning at Keeneland last weekend and doing it in a Grade 1 and doing it in wire-to-wire fashion, which on that Keeneland turf course is not an easy thing to do. But that's exactly what Blowout did in the Grade 1 First Lady. And that was a field that included multiple Grade 1 winner Althika, who a lot of people feel is the leader in that division. But Blowout is a game mare. She doesn't always win, but when she loses by a razor-thin margin. But she did indeed win that Grade 1. And I know Althika had traffic trouble. Maybe it's a different story if she doesn't. But for me, if I'm answering that question, I'm picking Blowout as the horse that I've been most impressed with. And trust me, she loves that Del Mar turf, too. She's handled it just fine. She ran in the Grade 1 Matriarch at Del Mar last November. She was second, beaten by a nose. She can handle the turf course. She has early speed. She is a tough out when she has the lead in the stretch. You better bring your A game if you're going to get by Blowout. And much like a lot of the runners that go to the Breeders' Cup that have success throughout the year, they get overlooked. They get overlooked because the fields are so strong. You get great. Isn't that one thing that makes the Breeders' Cup so good? The fact that you're going to have horses that are Grade 1 winners, like Blowout, maybe multiple Grade 1 winners, that you might get 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 to 1. Really good horses. That's what makes the Breeders' Cup so amazing. And that's why so many people, myself included, as soon as the pre-entries come out, you start poring over the past performances. If I'm not mistaken, I think Brisnet already has past performances out there for the horses that are expected to go into the Breeders' Cup for each division. so you can kind of start poring over those PPs now and get a sense of who you might like. But that's one of the things that always excites me. Now, that can also make it a bit more – it can give you an opportunity to make more money if you get the right combinations because you have good horses going off at big odds. But it also makes it a lot more challenging when you're putting your tickets together because of the fact that you do have so many possibilities. So you have to go really deep in a lot of those races. Maybe you single a horse like Latruska or you single a Nixco, which, by the way, I'm not even sure if Nixco is going to be favored in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's the number one ranked horse in the NTRA poll, but in the Breeders' Cup Classic poll, he's second behind Stablemate and three-year-old Champion Essential Quality. Well, juvenile champion, soon to be three-year-old champion, I would say. So, you look at that Breeders' Cup Classic and you say, who do I single? Yeah, maybe you don't. Maybe you got to go deep. I don't know. But it's one of those things that really, it's one of the elements of the Breeders' Cup that really does make it so special. In terms of today's QE2 at Keeneland, and that's, you know, a fantastic renewal. You heard the call of Empress Josephine winning the Grade 1 1,000 Irish 1,000 guineas back in May. Since that effort, she is 0 for 4. But the three-year-old returns on 1 week's rest after finishing a fast-closing third in the Grade 1 First Lady behind Blowout, who I just talked about. The blinkers go on today for Aiden O'Brien, and Empress Josephine has the services of Hall of Famer John Velasquez, who takes the return call, and Johnny V, a winner of 5 runnings of the QE2. 1995, I told you, was his first one. 2008, 2014, 2016, he won it again in 2019 with Cambier Park. So Empress Josephine looks like she could be a handful, and she has to be doing really well to bring her right back on short rest like that. But that's, look, she's 3-1 on the morning line. The horse to her inside for Chad Brown, Shantasara, has won 2 in a row, including the Grade 3 Pucker Up at Arlington 2 starts ago. She's certainly no slouch, and she could get Empress Josephine a run for her money later today. Technical analysis, another Chad Brown runner. And if you're wondering about Chad Brown and his success in this race, it's been pretty good for him, too. A win today, and he will stand alone atop the trainer standings in this particular race. He's currently tied with 3 wins in the race with Hall of Famer John Veitch and with Jimmy Toner. So one more today for Chad will put him at the top of the list, and I think we can all agree Chad Brown, a future Hall of Famer. He'll have his plaque in Saratoga Springs when he's eligible. But technical analysis, a horse that went wire-to-wire to win the Grade 2 Lake Placid last time, but before that, in the Lake George at Saratoga, sat just off the pace and rallied. Jose Ortiz is the only jockey that technical analysis has ever known in her 6 lifetime starts, and he is back aboard again today. So expect technical analysis to be in the mix in the late going as well. But it's a really solid field. Field of 10 set to go. It is going to be race number 8 today, mile and an eighth on the turf here at Keeneland. The weather is going to be a bit cooler in the Bluegrass if you are handicapping. We did get plenty of rain that came through the area last night, so that turf course should have plenty of give to it. But the sun is shining now, and the temperatures are expected to get up to roughly 60 degrees today. It's going to be a cooler day. Horses love it. People don't. And as you know, Keeneland can be one of the coldest places on the planet when it gets to be in the 50s and 60s. Especially if that wind is blowing, coming through that tunnel and coming across the grandstand. But regardless, it's a great day of racing. Race 8 is the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup. 444 Eastern is the post. That's 144 out west. And I said in the beginning of the show, don't be surprised if you see one of these fillies make their way to Del Mar. The challenge even if they run well today and they win the QE2, is that, well, number one, this is they're running against three-year-olds, but now they have to go to take on older horses in the Philly and Mare turf. That's fine, but they also have to stretch out and go further than this mile and an eighth. And you have to determine if your horse, even if she wins today, does she want to go that far? Should be fun to watch, though. Kurt Becker joined me in the first half of the program, first hour of the program, as did Robert Geller. Kurt, the announcer at Keeneland, Robert, the announcer at Woodbine. They talked about some of the Breeders' Cup Challenge races we've seen, but Robert also looked ahead to tomorrow's Grade 1 E.P. Taylor and Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes and shared his thoughts on those races. If you missed them, a podcast of the program will be available on our website, horseracingradio.net, after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. So you can go back and hear their thoughts on the big races as you get ready to bet them. Don't forget, too, that while you're on our website, horseracingradio.net, you can check out podcasts of all of our programming throughout this past week, including Trainer Talk from Wednesday evening. Thursday was the Brisnet.com call-in show. And last night, Bobby Newman took a look at so many of the big races coming up across the country with the weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts. So do not bet the races without going to our website and listening to those programs, because I think you'll get a lot of great insight when you do so. All right, coming up in the next segment, it is time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. These are always amazing segments, and this week figures to be no exception. I welcome Keeneland starter Jeff Powell. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment and Keeneland Select on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
World Class Racing is back at Spectacular Santa Anita, and be sure to join us this weekend for a pair of Hillside Turf Stakes, the $100,000 California Distaff Handicap on Saturday, and the $100,000 California Flag Handicap on Sunday. Bring your little jockeys out each weekend to enjoy pony rides, inflatable jumpers, face painting, and more in our infield family fun zone. Fun zone tickets are available online at SantaAnita.com or in person. Infield admission is just $5, which covers parking in a racing program. Kids 17 and under are admitted free. And fans, join us each Friday as we offer free general admission and parking, along with $3 beers and $5 specialty cocktails to those 21 and over. You can also take a shot through closing day October 31st at a prize pool of $12,000 in our new Pick'em game by choosing a series of racing and sports props at SantaAnita.com/contest. First post time is at 1 o'clock.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Special Reserve chased all the way down the stretch by Aloha West. Special Reserve, Aloha West. Special Reserve hangs on by a head.
Special Reserve, the son of Darley Stallion Midshipman, put forth that impressive effort in winning the Grade 2 Phoenix Stakes, a win in your in at Keeneland on Friday, notching a 101 buyer and earning a spot in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Also last weekend at Keeneland, Midshipman's two-year-old daughter Averly Jane won the Win in Your In Indian Summer Stakes, punching her ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. Special Reserve and Averly Jane are your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Darley Stallion Midshipman, an Eclipse Champion two-year-old and record-breaking Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. No stallion under 40,000 can top Midshipman's 11 black type winners in 2021. Learn more about Midshipman and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one, And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
That's a sport filled with unsung heroes, including this week's guest, who is Jeff Powell. He is the starter at Keeneland, and boy, what amazing work he does. There are so many of you that might not even realize that his job exists, but it is critical for the success of racing day in and day out. Every track has a starter, and Jeff's going to tell you all about it now. Jeff, first of all, good morning. Thanks for taking some time, and congratulations on being this week's unsung hero.
Well, thanks, Mike. Actually, the guys that work for me should be the unsung heroes, not me. Believe me, they do all the work.
Well, you know, I've had an opportunity to visit with some starting gate crew members, and you're right. It's almost a thankless job. If you're a fan watching the races, you don't pay attention to those folks. But boy, without them, it would just be a nightmare, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. All the guys have been around horses their life, you know, especially around the racetrack they have been. And they know what they're doing. All the guys that work here at Keeneland have been doing it for a long time, so you don't have to really worry too much. But most of their work starts in the morning, you know, when we're training the horses. So that way we know what to do in the afternoon.
Yep. This, Jeff, is your first year as the starter at Keeneland. Let's start here. Tell me a little bit about what your job entails and how you go about your daily routine.
Well, first thing in the morning, we start at 6:30 schooling horses, teaching them to do what they do in the afternoon, the end products in the afternoon. Most of the work's in the morning, especially the young horses. We lead them through the first time they're there and back and forth through and probably just let them go. Unless they're really good, we might close them up. We just don't want to scare them the first time they're there. And then after that, they slowly progress from walking out to jogging out, each time getting a little faster till they learn to break. And when you put company with them, their natural tendency for competition comes out, and it makes them come out a little faster. We break them a couple times, and then you start backing them out to calm them down, because then you got them all stirred up, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of each horse is a little different. If you have a problem with the horse, you have to try to fix it. We keep books on all the horses, so certain horses you might have to put a shank on to get him in to go in a little better, or I'll open the front doors on one sometimes. You know, it's just try to make everything easier for everybody, especially the horse.
So you are, and forgive me if I get this wrong, but you are essentially the quarterback working with the starting gate crew members and kind of running the show and directing everything, but it's a team effort.
Oh, absolutely a team effort, yeah. And believe me, I forget things, and these guys will tell me, hey, we had that horse up there, you know, a couple days ago, and this is what we did with them, and we'll do that, you know, adjust to, if I had forgotten about it or hadn't written it down, which it's usually written down, but sometimes you miss things, you know. But all these guys have good memories too, and if they've handled a horse in the morning, you try to put them with that horse in the afternoon if the horse has been a problem, so they know them and know what's going to happen, you know.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. What, Jeff, is the ultimate goal, the best scenario that can happen for a horse when the horse goes into the starting gate? What are you and the team trying to accomplish each and every race?
Well, the best thing is if each horse walks in there with no problem, stands quietly, relaxed. A horse that's relaxed will break better than one that's standing there moving around. And, you know, you don't have to do anything else. You just, everybody gets them all straight after the last one's in, and away you go. It's that's a perfect thing, but usually there's some of them moving around, so you got to – I always watch their feet when they come in, each horse as they come in. I watch their feet, make sure they're okay. If one of them's having a problem, we might pick a horse's tail up or you know, guys do certain things just to calm the horse down, just so he's paying attention for 2 seconds is all we need. All of them at the same time paying attention for 2 seconds, and they can – 1 or 2 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take long.
I've often talked about a moment of silence, right? Which when everything slows down and comes to a stop. And as you just said, 2 seconds is all it takes. But you'll hear a lot of – if people are next to a starting gate at a racetrack, they'll hear a lot of noise. They'll hear the jockeys talking to the handlers and to the starting gate crew members. How do you know the exact right time to spring the latch?
Well, it's just like you said. It's real quiet. I watch all the horses as they go in, like I said. And you can tell if one's going to probably do something before he does it. And after you've done this for a while, you can – just kind of tell that he's going to, so you might take a special look at him, you know, make sure the last horse is in, the back doors are locked, my man's up on the pontoon, and once it gets quiet and as straight as they're going to get, away you go. You know, it's, there's sometimes it's a guessing game, but usually you know.
Yeah.
Yesterday there was a horse in with a guy, and he kept turning his head to the inside, and he'd straighten him up, and then he'd turn it back again. And the horses are really strong, you know, and they're fast. So that I was thinking, well, I'm going to – by the time I push this button, he's going to do it again. But I got lucky. He didn't do it again. You know, they came out of there.
Visiting with Keeneland starter Jeff Powell here in this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. You heard him talk about his team, and it is a team effort. He's the quarterback, essentially, but he works with a team of starting gate crew members that help ensure a safe and a fair start to every race. Jeff, let me ask you this question. What is the one thing that keeps you up at night, the one nightmare scenario that a starter could experience?
Oh, God. Leaving a horse behind the starting gate, and I'm knocking on some wood right now because I don't even like to talk about that. That's my nightmare.
Yeah.
That would be my nightmare.
Do you ever spring the latch and go, gosh, I should have waited an extra second?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Really?
Or I missed my chance. You know, sometimes you do it, and you think you should have done it quicker because, you know, or you should have waited. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's lots of times that's happened. Believe me, to every starter that's ever started a race, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. You know, I mentioned the conversation and that you know the things that go on in the starting gate. If you would take me inside the gate when the horse loads. And the jockeys aboard the horse and the starting gate crew members are there in the stall with each horse. What exactly is going on? What are those conversations like, if they even are conversations, between the jockey and the starting gate crew?
Oh, yeah, there's always conversations. A lot of times you're just trying to get the jockeys to relax, too, because, I mean, they're not scared, but they're nervous, you know, and they want to get out good. They don't want their horse to stumble. They don't want to get bumped when they come out of there. They want their horse straight too. But sometimes they're trying to help you too much, and that affects the horse too. You know, they're trying to do the same thing you're doing. It's kind of a you go in and you'll talk. You talk to riders. How you doing today? You know, just kind of conversation like that. Or they'll say they want to get off really good, which everybody does. And, you know, we don't have to say that. We know that, you know, things like that. It's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, you know, you said you keep a book on each horse so you know their tendencies, so you can review it when you get ready to load them in for the races in the afternoons. How about with the jockeys? Is there something to be said for the starting gate crew having a knowledge of the jockey and their tendencies?
Well, yeah, and you know how people, some people get along better with other people, and I've actually, when I worked in Florida, I actually tried to put guys that I knew got along with jockeys in with them, too, because it helps, believe me. If they don't like the jockey, which, you know, some people don't get along, you try to, because that tends to bother the horse, too. You know, there's kind of there's a lot of different things you're dealing with. You're dealing with, you know, two people in there and a horse, and you're trying to keep them all quiet. And these guys do a good job, I'm telling you right now, a real good job.
It really is fascinating. And, you know, being on the starting gate crew is one of the, first of all, a lot of people don't even realize how much great work that they do and how important they are to the start of a race. But it's one of the most dangerous jobs that you can have on the racetrack too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The thing I always say is, you know, you'll see a horse rear up and the jockey gets thrown out. Usually, sometimes, a lot of times the jockeys get hurt in there too, but the jockey can always get off and leave. The guy in there with the horse, if he's doing his job right, he can't leave. He's staying in there with that horse, trying to keep him in there from hurting himself or anybody else or the guy beside you. There's horses on both sides of you. Those horses rear up and they'll strike the guy next to them and strike the guy in the stall with them. All kinds of bad things can happen. And the guys tear their shoulders up and their knees. And there's not too many old assistant starters with good backs either.
Yeah.
From pushing
yeah.
horses in, and you know, it's a rough job. But most of the guys that do it for a long time, they're doing it because they really like it. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's for love of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, they say in football that if you don't notice an offensive lineman that they are doing their job correctly, but you notice them when they mess up and they get called for a holding penalty, for example, or hands to the face or one of those types of things. But if they don't get a penalty, you don't notice them, and that means they're doing their job right. And it's very much like that with the starter's role too, isn't it?
Yeah. If somebody knows your name, it's usually for a reason. A lot of people don't know who you are. You're probably doing a pretty good job.
Well, Jeff, yes, spend a minute or two talking about your background. I know you said you grew up in Wyoming. Is that right?
No, I'm from Montana.
Montana. Okay.
Yeah, we used to race horses in Washington, Oregon, and the fairs in Montana when I was a little kid. And in 84, I went to Florida, 1984, and started. I worked on the gate down there for Charlie Kamak. Worked for him, and then when he went to be a steward, I worked for Bob Bond. Between those two guys, I worked down there for 25 years. Then I was a starter for 10 years. But I've been on the racetrack my whole life. Both sides of my family are racetrackers. My brother's not. He's a cowboy, but we're all horse people, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's all about the love of the horse, and that's what makes you successful. Is there any difference? I mean, I would think a starter, the job of a starter is the same whether it's in Florida or Kentucky or California or New York. Is there any difference at being a starter here in Kentucky than there was in Florida?
Oh, no, I don't think you do the job the same way.
Yep.
You know, whether they're cheaper horses or good horses, you try to do the job exactly the same. That's what I was always taught. And, you know, everybody wants their horse to win. So you're trying to achieve that, whether the horse is 50-1 or even money. You know, I just try to get them all out of there together.
Well, Jeff, your whole life has been about horses. By the way, Jeff Powell is my special guest on Unsung Heroes. He is the new starter at Keeneland. Your whole life has been about horses. What do you think you might be doing if you weren't doing this job for a living?
Well, I was in Montana for the last 3 years because my dad got sick. I left Florida, but when I went there, I was working in a hardwood floor place, so there you go. And I didn't enjoy that near as much as I do this.
Well, I can say that we are very happy that you are back in the game, and you do a fantastic job, and really enjoy this visit with you here this morning. Keep up the wonderful work, and let's hope that nobody notices you going forward.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I just want to say again what a good crew these guys are. They do a really good job. They make it look good. Make my job easier, believe me.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. A lot of people don't even know that those jobs exist. Really appreciate it, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Jeff Powell, the new starter at Keeneland, this week's Unsung Hero, presented by Claiborne. And, it is a team effort. He's the quarterback. He's the one calling the shots, but it's a team effort. And fascinating to hear him talk about, you know, how they handle a horse and how they work with the jockeys when they get in there. Those are things, myself included, that you don't even realize go on in the sport with every race at every track, day in and day out. I mean, it's a whole nother facet of the industry, which is why it was appropriate that Jeff be this week's unsung hero. I'm back with more right after this word from Claiborne.
DeMarchelier offers breeders a rare opportunity. His pedigree includes 9 Grade 1 winners under the first 3 dams, including classic winner Galileo Crone. A TDN rising star at 2, he went on to capture victories at Keeneland and Belmont, including the Grade 3 Pennine Ridge Stakes. By Sire of Sires Dubawi, whose top sons include the sensational sire Knight of Thunder. The only stallion by Dubawi in Kentucky. DeMarchelier, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Well, it really is such a privilege to be able to visit with folks like Jeff and recognize them as an unsung hero. If you know someone that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero, all you have to do is send me their information, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can nominate them for that segment, and I will do my best to have them on the program and recognize them as an unsung hero in our sport. So if you know somebody doing great work behind the scenes, send me an email with their story, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I'll try to recognize them on Unsung Heroes in the weeks and the months ahead. All right, when I come back, it's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup, and I will be joined by trainer Neil Pessin. This should be a lot of fun. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here, coming November 5th and 6th, exclusively on HRRN.
Join the Maryland Jockey Club for the 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day on Saturday, October 23rd at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. Enjoy a full day of racing with on-track entertainment between the races. It will be fun for all at Laurel Park, Saturday, October 23rd. First post time, 11:30 a.m. Go to laurelpark.com for more information. That's laurelpark.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This weekend, Woodbine wraps up their popular Ladies of the Lawn series with the Grade 1 EP Taylor Stakes on the outer turf course for fillies and mares 3-year-olds and up. Launched in 2019, the series, which supports Rethink Breast Cancer, kicked off on Sunday, August 22nd, with the Grade 3 Dance Smartly Stakes, won by Muta Makina, and was followed by the Grade 2 Canadian Stakes on Saturday, September 18th, a race in which La Dragon Tea took home the top prize. The stakes are high this weekend. The owner of the horse who has accumulated the most points at the end of the 3 races will receive a $50,000 bonus, while the owner of the horse who has accumulated the second and third most points will receive a $15,000 and $10,000 bonus, respectively. Going into tomorrow's EP Taylor, Muta Makina, La Dragon Tea, and Court Return make up a 3-way tie at the top of the standings with 10 points apiece. They'll settle it on the Woodbine Turf tomorrow. Also on the Sunday card, a field of 10 in a highly competitive renewal of the Grade 2 New Arctic at 6 furlongs on the grass. Sunday's early pick 4 is guaranteed at $100,000 and begins in race number 4. First post both Saturday and Sunday is 12:55 p.m. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB. Race to the finish line with Latruska. Latruska's 2021 campaign can be summed up in one word: brilliant. Coming off her only defeat this year, a second-place finish by a head to multiple Grade 1 winner She Dares the Devil in Oakland's Azari Stakes, Latruska put her tremendous heart on display 5 weeks later in her highly anticipated showdown with champion Monomoy Girl in the Grade 1 Apple Blossom.
Monomoy Girl Latruska has turned away the champion! Oh my goodness! Latruska wins the Apple Blossom!
A stretch battle for the ages between two gallant mares. In the end, it would be Latruska's nose in front and a well-deserved first Grade 1 victory on her resume.
Hi, this is Fausto Gutierrez, Latruska's trainer. I credit Total Control Plus and Performance Builder for her success. It has made her a Grade 1 winner and put her at the top. She looks better every day and is not afraid of any competition. Thank you, Finish Line.
Latruska, fueled by Finish Line.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Bell's the one, starts her run, moves out to the center of the track from last, just outside of Club Car, who's 5 from the lead. They turn for home. In the midst of Biz, the leader, Bell's the one, is coming down the outside. Frank's Rocket is trying to squeeze through toward the inside. Estilo Talentoso is there as well. Frank's Rocket up the rail. Estilo Talentoso is there. And Bell's the one on the outside. Club Car runs late down the extreme outside. Bell's the one, Club Car. Bell's the one, Club Car. Estilo Talentoso. Bell's the one takes it by a neck for Corey Lannery. 1:08.63.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Kurt Becker with the call of Bell's the One getting the victory in the Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America Stakes at Keeneland last weekend. It was the fifth greatest stakes victory of her career for trainer Neil Pessin, and boy, what a ride it has been. Neil will join me momentarily to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Neil, I'll tell you what. When you think back on that effort last weekend, you just have to be over the moon. This is such a classy mare, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Yeah,
she's done everything we could possibly ask her to do.
Yeah, she has throughout her entire career. As you're put me there with you as you're watching her come through the stretch last weekend.
Well, she was laying in a good position. I thought Corey had her just right. She likes to be on the outside, so we went wide around the turn. There was really no place to tuck in. But when she started making her move around the 5/16th pole and started moving up, and when she turned for home, I really didn't think she'd be beat. I was riding a little bit. I put my binoculars down and went to riding a little bit. So she overcame that weight. And when Club Car was coming to her, I really wasn't worried too much because she's a very hard horse to get by. She kind of is one that usually just does what she wants to do. She doesn't win by daylight a lot. So a couple times she has, but most of the time she's likes it a little close, and she's very, very competitive. So I thought if Club Car got to her, she couldn't get by her because she was right beside her. So I was pretty confident the whole way down the stretch.
You know, the cameras caught you on TV. You're right. You did go to riding a little bit. Had great form, by the way.
Well, thank you. Practice, lots of practice over, you know, a few years of practice.
Yeah, you've been doing
not
this
just,
a lot.
Not just ones I want run, but the ones I bet on, too.
Yeah, you've been doing this a long time. Did you bet on Bell's the One?
I made a straight exacto with me over Club Car and Estelio Talentoso.
All right.
So, and that was it, because she was even money. And I'll be honest, when I run horses, I love to bet, but I don't think about betting. if I don't do it early, I don't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I'm more concentrating on the horse than on anything else. So betting kind of takes a back seat when I have one in.
Do you take the show on the road to Del Mar next?
That's a good question. I don't know yet. And it's not because of her. It's just because of the shipping. I'm not real enamored with the way we have to go out there. I think you can take a lot out of the horse the way they've got it set up. And I know it's the best they could do. They didn't have a lot of time to get it done. But you'd have to go FedEx. We'd have to leave Louisville 5 hours before the plane was going to leave to go to Indianapolis. They put them in a crate with two other horses. They're going to have 11 crates on the plane. Takes about two and a half hours to load the crates and get them on the plane. And you can't send any help with them. And then they uncrate them at Del Mar or at San Diego and then van them over to Del Mar. And then as of right now, there's no ride back, and it's not going to be a dedicated plane coming back. So we could be out there a week before we get back. So I'm not real sure what we're doing yet. There's a $300,000 race the week after at Churchill that we can walk out of our own stall and go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but we'll see. She seems to be doing really well out of the race. We haven't worked her back yet. We'll work her next Friday or Saturday, and we'll see how she does. Then I'll talk to Mr. Lothenbach, and he'll be the final say on whether we go or not.
Why is the shipping process so much different this year than it's been in the past?
Tech Sutton is out of business right now. They don't have a plane, and they used to leave right from Louisville. You go straight from the van to the plane, and they box you up after you get in the plane. It takes about 2 minutes a horse to do that, and you can send your help. With FedEx, they got to go from Indianapolis because that's where their one of their hubs is, and they don't allow other people on there. They've got three Tech Sutton grooms that are allowed to go on that have to load and unload all the horses and unload and unload all the tack that we send also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, not ideal. Not ideal this year in terms of the process and getting out there, so I can see where this would be a somewhat difficult decision. Talking with Neil Pessin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the trainer of Bell's the One, who was so impressive at Keeneland last weekend. Neil, as you said, if you don't go to the Breeders' Cup, you've got the race right in your backyard that you can run in. You said she's tough to get by, and she certainly is. When she gets the lead in deep stretch, she's going to be a tough out. Has she always been like that? Have you always seen that quality in her?
Oh, yeah. She's always been a little quirky. She's not the easiest mare to train in the world. That's one reason we're not going early out to Breeders' Cup is we have to have company to get her started training. And when we work her, she likes to have a horse in front of her. Otherwise, she doesn't work real well because she likes a target.
Yeah.
But she's always, always shown ability from day one. From the like her first or second breeds, I knew she could run. You just don't know how good they are. You know, you can tell. I knew she was going to be a stakes horse. I just know if it's going to be grade one, two, or three. So, and she's gotten better as she gets older, I think.
So let's just take the scenario of, okay, Mr. Lothenbach decides we're going to go to the Breeders' Cup after she has her next workout. As the trainer, what are you trying to do with her in particular to make sure that she's ready to fire her best shot when she gets to Del Mar?
Well, she's got two breezes before that, one this Friday or Saturday and one probably the Friday or Saturday before we would leave on Monday on the plane. And we just try and have her fresh. I may lighten up on her training a little bit before we get on the plane just so she's a little fresher and doesn't get as knocked out on the flight. Because if everything goes perfect, it's going to be about a 12-hour ordeal total from stall to stall.
Man.
And most of that in a single stall in a crate. So, and they don't get to Del Mar probably, you know, till nighttime, which throws their whole system off as far as eating and that stuff. So hopefully she can overcome all that and we'd give her Tuesday off, just walk her, then gallop her light Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and hope she's sharp and ready to go on Saturday.
It sounds like you and I should start a horse transportation company, Neil.
I think it'd be great. You know, the problem is getting the plane and the insurance.
That's
the main thing. So, but there's plenty, I think there's plenty out there to do, especially going west to east or east to west right now, because there's really nobody doing it except FedEx, and it's a pain in the butt to do.
Yeah, yeah. Is she normally a good shipper when you've flown her in the past?
Well, we've only flown her once, and that was up to Belmont, and she didn't run any good in the Acorn. Mm-hmm. But I think that was more track than her. I don't think it really favored her that day. Plus, we hooked a really nice filly of Chad Brown's.
Yep.
So that nobody was going to beat that day. But I thought she could have been second. I think she wound up fifth, didn't get beat that far for second.
You know, you've given a leg up to jockey Corey Lannery for the majority of Bell's the One's career, and they know each other really, really well. Talk about Corey and why he's such a good fit for Bell's the One.
Well, I think Corey fits a lot of horses. You know, he's been leading trainer at Churchill, I don't know how many, or leading jockey at Churchill, I don't know how many times. And this is usually a pretty deep riding colony. So Corey's a very talented rider, but he's also a very patient rider. And honestly, he likes to come up the fence a lot, and this mare doesn't. So it's really not a perfect fit as far as his riding style, but he fits her because he'll sit, get her to relax, and when she's ready to go, she'll tell him, and he lets her, then he angles her out, and she comes running.
Yeah.
So, but I think Corey fits a lot of horses, just not her, because I ride him on quite a few in the stable.
Yeah, I know how big of a win that was last weekend, being at Keeneland, being in the Grade 2. She is, of course, a Grade 1 winner, too. Do you have a favorite Bell's the One moment, Neil?
Well, I don't know if it's a favorite, but my one I like to tell the most is before she ever ran, I was putting money aside to bet on her because I was going to make a sizable wager on her. And 2 weeks before, she'd be galloping along. This is before she got needed company and stuff. She'd be galloping along and just stop. And she did that four different times 2 weeks before the race. And we'd have to go get her and walk her off the racetrack.
Wow.
So my big wager went down to $50 to win and show because I didn't know what she was going to do, and I couldn't afford to lose the money at the time. So I backed my wager up considerably. And, of course, she just wins easy and pays $67.
Yeah, of course. Isn't that the way it always works?
So that's why I was happy. And I wasn't even going to bet the 50 to win and show. The only reason I did is when I walked out of the paddock, she was 20-1, and I couldn't believe it. So that's why I went and bet.
Wow. What a great story. And the rest is history with Bell's the One. Again, now I believe a five-time, am I right, five-time graded stakes winner?
I think five or six, something like that, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I know she's won 10 races out of 21 starts.
Yep. Yeah, five-time greatest stakes winner, according to Equibase. That's fantastic. What a run. And what a run for her trainer, Neil Pessin. Neil, I've always said you're one of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and wish you all the success, whether it's her next start at Churchill or if she goes out west to Del Mar. We'll be cheering for you, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. And I know she's going to show up no matter where we go, so I know she's got a heart of gold, and she just gives you her all every time she runs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, great stuff. Neil, appreciate it. Good luck, my friend.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Mike.
All right, Neil Pessin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Great story, too. Saw that she was a long shot. Yeah, put a few bucks on her. $60-something dollars to win. Yeah, great story. All right, I'm going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll take a look at some historical dates in racing history on this weekend and get you set for hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
When kids need medical care, they will often face stressful and life-changing experiences. From complex treatments to long hospital stays, these special patients miss out on the things that most kids take for granted and let kids be kids. That's where Starlight Children's Foundation comes in. Since 1982, Starlight Children's Foundation has transformed the in-hospital experience for more than 17 million seriously ill kids in 800 children's hospitals and facilities across the United States. Our state-of-the-art programs like Starlight Virtual Reality, Starlight Hospital Wear, and Starlight Gaming let kids just be kids, if even for a few moments. Whether donning an action figure gown instead of standard hospital issue, or settling into gamer mode, if it brings a smile, a laugh, or just a break from their reality, it's happiness delivered. Learn more at starlight.org. That's starlight.org.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Just a few minutes left here in the second hour of the program, transitioning to hour three, which begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy. His unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation this week is with steeplechase rider Graham Waters. That should be fascinating. It's steeplechase jockey to steeplechase jockey. Those are always fun. Stay tuned for that, and I'll tell you more about what's coming up in the third hour of the program. But time now to take a look at some historical dates in racing history as it pertains to this weekend. But I wanted to take a look at a date from yesterday. October 15th, 1977 was the anniversary of the fifth of 10 meetings, and Ali Darr won his second victory over Affirmed in the Champagne Stakes at Belmont. That was October 5th, 1977. I thought that was intriguing. Tomorrow, October 17th, 1970, was the day that Nijinsky II ended his career, finishing second to champion in the Champion Stakes at Newmarket. In 13 races, he won 11 times and finished second twice. It was October 17th, 1986, that Kent DeSormo made his Maryland debut in the fourth race at Laurel. He did it aboard Shonda's Shickles. How about that? Finished second, but was disqualified for interference, and he was placed fourth. October 17th, 1991, it was the day that Hall of Fame jockey Angel Cordero Jr. rode his 7,000th victory aboard Don't Cross the Law at Belmont Park. And those are your historical dates in racing history for this Saturday morning. Some notable jockeys there, huh? Kent DeSormo, Angel Cordero Jr., some of the best to ever ply their trade, for sure. All right, don't forget, Hour 3 comes up shortly. If you missed any portion of the show so far, my visits with Kurt Becker, with Robert Geller, Unsung Heroes with Jeff Powell. That was a fascinating conversation with the Keeneland starter. And with Neil Pessin just a short time ago, who was fantastic, talking about Bell's the One. All you have to do is go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast from. Poll question today, so many of you weighing in. Let's see. It's presented by Owner View and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most going into this year's event? Keep those coming at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, you can email me your thoughts, mike@horseracingradio.net. Well, 2 hours down, one to go on this morning's edition of the Equine Forum. Hour three begins momentarily with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. 10:25, it is Kurt Becker and his weekly stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, don't miss this, I welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Opening half mile in 49 seconds and just drawing clear to the line. Day at the Spa, Queen for a Day at Keeneland. She has won the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup in front-running style for Javier Castellano.
Here comes Greenpeace roaring down the center of the course. I'm a Dreamer trying to hold on. Greenpeace, Miss Keller, three of them in a heart-stopping finish. Picture time. Was it Miss Keller, I'm a Dreamer, or Greenpeace in a three-horse win photo in the E.P. Taylor Stakes?
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Sturdicus, a heart the size of the grandstand, true to tradition. Here comes Roast the Cat. What a finish, true to tradition. And Roast the Cat in a stirring photo finish in the New Arctic.
Rushing fall with Missy on Impossible right alongside Nialetti. His needing running room has to switch lanes toward the outside. Rushing fall responding to the challenge of Missy on Impossible, who's not throwing in the towel yet. Rushing fall with the lead by a length, chased all the way to the line by Missy on Impossible. Rushing fall prevails in the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup presented by Lane's End for Javier Castellano.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Man, I love that open. Get you pumped up for another big weekend of thoroughbred racing. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, kicking off hour number three of the Equine Forum. Happy to have you along for the ride this morning. Of course, you have the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup at Keeneland, not the only QE2 stakes being run today. You also have the Win in Your Inn events that are going to be run at Ascot, the final two Breeders' Cup Challenge races of the season. And then the Breeders' Cup, of course, coming up in 20 days. And I know so many of you are expecting me to give you a countdown because that's kind of what we do here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So here you go. 20 days, 7 hours, 47 minutes until the Breeders' Cup return to Del Mar. We'll be there as your exclusive radio home. More than 15 hours of Breeders' Cup week programming coming your way live from Del Mar here on the network. It begins on Tuesday morning with the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows presented by Hillandale. Those come your way from 8 to 10 Pacific. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will be trackside for 2 hours Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning of Breeders' Cup week to visit with owners and trainers and breeders and handicappers. And they'll give you the latest real-time updates on horses as they're training. You won't want to miss those shows. The Breeders' Cup Countdown presented by Hillandale Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning of Breeders' Cup week. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to see a complete Breeders' Cup week schedule. Of course, then we turn our attention to the races on Friday and Saturday. Every single race live with us here on the network for the 15th consecutive year. Proud and privileged to be able to say that. All right, Coming up next is In the Room with Sean Clancy. It begins a busy third hour of the show that includes Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. And in the final segment at 10:30 Eastern, I welcome Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin for I Ask, They Answer. That's going to be a lot of fun here. It's a sports theme. National Sports Day today, so we're going to have a little bit of a sports theme to that segment and some interesting conversation forthcoming in I Ask, They Answer. But time now to get you to our good friend Sean Clancy and this week's edition of In the Room.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jump jockey Graham Waters. We're on the cusp of Far Hills. Explain to people out there what Far Hills means to American steeplechasing.
Far Hills to American steeplechasing, I mean, it's our Cheltenham Festival, you know, one day racing, some of the best purses, all the best horses going for a very, very tough and fair racetrack.
Yeah, it's one of those racetracks. So I travel a lot, and I say there's some racetracks I don't, you maybe don't want to come to, but Far Hills is one you can stand up and be proud of.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's nice on a good horse. You wouldn't want to ride a bad horse around it. You know, you'd be, you know, the hurdles down the back, you're jumping slightly downhill, they kind of get away from you. If you're on a horse that's not traveling forward, they tend to kind of, you know, miss out and not really take the hurdles that well. But definitely a lovely track and very, very fair.
First time I was there as a kid with my father running horses, first time I rode a race there was a pony race in 1983. Talk about, you know, a wide-eyed, like, wow, welcome to horse racing. What was your first experience at Far Hills?
My first experience, I actually didn't have a bad day. I had three rides for Cyril Murphy and Irv Naylor and finished third on all three of them. So it wasn't a bad payday, and kind of, I actually have memories of that day coming away thinking, you know, three thirds, how bad was that? And then I kind of, that evening, I just sit and look at the results and what did I finish third to and realize, hey, they were $100,000, $150,000 races, you know, and it was actually a pretty, pretty good day out for the horses.
Yeah, this American steeplechasing obviously pales in comparison to Irish and British steeplechasing, but this is a championship day where you can be very proud and competitive, good, sharp racing that that you can be proud of.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, we'll know more tomorrow, and it's a pity there's small fields all day tomorrow compared to previous years, but definitely not lack in competition.
Yeah, take us through your ride the first five races. Obviously, the big one, snap decision in the Grand National four-horse race. What are your initial thoughts going into that race?
My initial thoughts is when I look at going to Egby Base and look at the prices of the horses, I think they don't realize how competitive I think that race is. I think all four of those horses could be odds on. I think you'd put a line, you know, you couldn't put a line through any one of them there. I think that's going to be a very, very competitive race.
How tough is it to ride a four-horse race? Is it tougher than a 10-horse race, especially when you're on one of the favorites?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's harder to run into trouble and get boxed in or, you know, get short of room or leave it too late or, you know, things like that. I mean, the only thing is jumping off tomorrow, it's going to be very, very tactical. Lucky enough, you know, we know the Mean Queen, we know what Snap can do. Amshel, I know him inside out. I've won an Old Lang on him myself, and I was third in the novice on him a few years back as well there. You know, I think any one of the four can make the running. I think we're just going to maybe look at each other jumping off, and you know, it's going to be very, very tactical early on, but I'm just going to jump off and do my thing and assess it from there.
Yeah, do you have more options than, say, the Mean Queen, Richie Conan on the Mean Queen, or Barry Gianfoli on Amshel, or Davy Russell on Chosen Mate? Have more options on Snap Decision?
I'm not sure if I've got more options. I mean, they're four equally very, very good horses. And with a good horse, you know yourself, you can ride them any way you want. And I think all four of them are very versatile.
Take us to the getting on Snap Decision. I mean, that was a big move for your career. This winter is a little bit of an opening. Getting the call on a horse like Snap Decision, who's arguably the best horse in the country.
Yeah, at the time, I mean, look, he was definitely by far the best horse in the country with the best form and everything. The Mean Queens came and put it up to him at Belmont, and you know, she was very, very gutsy there. But for me to get the ride on Snap Decision was a big decision, or big help for me in my career. It's been, you know, I've been riding 14, 15 years now, and this year's finally kind of came right. I'm riding the best horses for the top trainer, and I mean, Snap tops the pile, and it's just a privilege to be riding him.
Yeah, the race at Belmont, was there little things you can take out of that that maybe, you know, he's a little bit off a layoff, skip the summer? Are there things you take out of that and say, wow, I can get revenge on the Mean Queen from that race?
There's a lot of things you can take away. And, you know, I was lucky enough, the first time I rode him in the Temple Guatemi, he won, and he won in commanding fashion. Then he went to Nashville, similar scenario. And I think you take a lot more away. You learn a lot more from a horse getting beaten than you do winning. And when he was winning his 9 in a row, you can sort of say he was doing it pretty easy. But, you know, one thing we can definitely take away from Belmont is how tough the Mean Queen is, and not to be underestimating her.
Yeah, and is there room for improvement from Snap Decision from that race?
I definitely think he's going to improve from that run. He'll take it well. He wasn't in the form he was going into Nashville. There, he was in tip-top form. But working on the other day, he seems to be back to where he was just before Nashville.
What was his reaction to getting beat? Was that pulling up? Did he seem any different than winning those races in the spring?
He's a very, very intelligent horse, and he definitely knew he was beaten. He didn't like it.
Well, hopefully we get revenge in the Grand National. Take us back to the beginning, growing up in Ireland, wanting to be a steeplechase jockey. Like for me, people always ask me, how did you become a steeplechase jockey? I'm like, well, I grew up in my family, did it. It made perfect sense. Outside a steeplechase family, it doesn't always make a lot of sense. But for you, how did you get started in steeplechasing?
Well, I don't really have any family in horses. I just always loved horses and started riding in Ireland in terms of, you know, age. I started late at 8 or 9 years of age. And just started riding ponies and just started getting the hang of it, and loved to go fast, and horse racing was always the option. Show jumping and stuff was too slow for me. So when I was 15, I was finally old enough to leave school. So I was gone, and I moved way down to the south of the country, down to a guy who actually rode over here over timber. I don't know if you remember, a guy called Enda Bulger,
sure, of course.
Cross-country specialist in Ireland. And I spent a year or two with him and learned how to really jump horses and do all that. And then I ventured. I spent a few years pint to pint in Ireland and learned the ropes there and rode plenty of winners and, you know, learned how to ride young green horses and things. And then I moved to the north of England and rode 50 or 60 winners over there. And then ventured on down the south of England to kind of further my career. And it just got very, very tough as my claim was going out. And we got wind over here that Paddy Young was looking to retire, which he was for a few years. He was training and riding, and you know, it's very, very tough when you're trying to do that. And he was looking for someone to replace him, and we decided to come over for a couple of weeks. And it was the weekend at Radnor. Unfortunately, Paddy got the fall, and I picked up the spare rides for Paddy and Leslie that day, and was lucky enough to win my first Grade 3 that day on I can't even remember the horse name, Jamarjo, yeah. For the Nailers, and you know, it was a great experience or a great time in America. So we went home that summer, and we got the first day we arrived home, we started work on the visa, and we were back here 3 months later, and that was that.
And good decision?
Yeah, great decision. I mean, it was a fantastic lifestyle over here. You know, it's when I was in England, I was driving 60 or 70,000 miles a year, all out of pocket, you know, with the fuel prices and everything there. I mean, there wasn't much left for anything really. You're winning £1,000 races and things, and when I came here and seen the prize money, it was a no-brainer. You know, unfortunately with COVID and all that with Far Hills, you know, the prize money severely reduced, but still fantastic purses nonetheless.
Yeah, here you can actually have another life too. I mean, you can ride races on the weekend, and it's not the grind like Ireland and England where you're going every day up and down the country trying to eke out a living, I guess.
Yeah, it was very hard, you know, trying to plan anything in Ireland or England. You're racing 360 days a year when there's a 2 week break in England, but there's horse racing in Ireland. So you feel like you have to be doing one or the other, you know, getting on the boat, going over back and forth. Here the seasons are, you know, we got a little bit of time in the summer to, you know, enjoy things like that. And in the winter, we all know it's a long, cold winter here in Maryland, but we get through it. And, you know, there's definitely Monday to Friday in between racing, you can just have a normal life, go out for dinner and do things like that. And then, you know, as soon as the entries come out Monday night, you're sort of thinking about the following weekend. And all of a sudden, you know, the start of the season, it's mid-March and you're racing away, and all of a sudden then you know, you realize it's coming into November and it's nearly coming to an end.
Yeah, it goes fast somehow. It's March to November, so it goes fast.
Yeah, it flies. It flies. I mean, look, the summertime was, this summer was very, very busy for us in the jump race in between Colonial Downs on a Monday and then 700 miles north of that on a Wednesday or Thursday up in Saratoga. But, you know, we made it work and we had good fun doing it, and it was a privilege to be up in Saratoga and Belmont.
If you didn't come to America, would you still be riding in England?
I think definitely, yeah, still be riding away. To what level, I don't know. You know, I was riding away in the north of England, and there's still guys that I still keep in contact with most days. And I think, you know, a lot of guys, Sean McDermott and Willie McCarthy and all that back, you know, they used to go home in the winter. And I've looked at it and weighed it up, and it's very hard to kind of make it work financially. You know, you got to factor in your prices, your flight prices, and then licensing and everything like that. So I sort of worked out you need to have 20 rides over there to be able to just pay for the journey home, which is not easy to get over the course of 2 or 3 months. But this winter, I'm heading back. With COVID, we haven't been home in 2.5 years, so we're, you know, heading home this winter, and I'm going to bring the racing gear and sort of spend a couple of months riding and see how we get on.
And back at it, huh?
Yeah, back to some old familiar tracks. It'll be interesting to get back racing on deep or heavy ground and sort of test my fitness, you know, and when you get used to riding on good ground over here, horses travel and horses jump. I don't know how I will be pushing one for 3 miles.
Yeah, how big of an adjustment was it to come here and ride here compared to Europe?
I think a lot of guys struggle in the same way. England is very, very fast-paced. You know, it's very Martin Pipe-esque mentality. Jump off, be handy, go as hard as you can, best horse wins. You know, it's an absolute, every class 5 race is an absolute grind to win, war of attrition. And I think you get in that mindset as a rider, if you're not in the first 3 or 4, you're tailed off, you know, it's not happening. And you can see a lot of the guys come over here. And I made the mistake as well for, you know, a good year and a half of being too handy, getting there too soon, taking it up 4 out, kicking on. You know, and it's a style of race, and not only the American horse as well has a big factor into it. You know, they like to be covered up. They like to travel. They like to jump. And it took me a while to kind of figure it out. And it's funny, you can't really tell anybody when a new guy comes over or whatever, you want to say to him, hey, you know, but it's just one of those things you have to just sit back and just figure out for yourself. And I wanted, at the time, I remember thinking, God, it was a year and a half before I figured it out. But I can still see guys now that have been here longer still making, you know, same mistakes, and your old habits are still there. You still, you know, when you're jumping 4 out and you're you want to take it up and kick on. But, you know, just from recent experience, you just have to tell yourself, just wait.
And that experience has to help when you get an opportunity like riding Snap Decision, I guess.
Yeah, Snap is definitely a horse that likes to travel. You know, he's a gutsy horse. He tries very hard. So when you get stuck into him, you know, he's already giving you 110%. So he's definitely a horse that likes to sit and travel and jumps a lot better when you're keeping a hold of him, you know, ride him with plenty of leg and keep your hands as quiet as possible. He's definitely a horse that likes to do that.
Did you ever get an opportunity to ride a horse like Snap Decision in Europe, or is that he's the best you've ever ridden?
He's a different type of horse. I've always, any good horse that I've had in my career was a 4 mile chaser. I mean, I've only ridden 2 big winners in the UK. One was the Eider Chase. It's a 4.25 mile chase with 28 fences in February. It's bottomless ground. I think it took like 9 minutes, you know, and different type of horse. Slow, like I said, pushing him for 3 mile. My other biggest winner was the Summer Cup at Uttoxeter, which is one of the biggest jumps races in the summertime in the UK. And again, that's 4.1 miles. And the horse I won on that was called Dropout Joe. He ended up going on to the Aintree Grand National the following season. And again, that was like, you know, 25 fences. You know, I never had a horse like Snap that, you know, a sharp 2 mile or 2.25 mile hurdler. That travel and jump, you know, but he's a different experience.
And for the Fanticipate question of the day, who is your biggest fan in your career now or growing up or in your career? Who's been your biggest fan?
I don't really want to say because I'm riding again him tomorrow. It's Davy Russell. He's one of those guys. It was just a funny scenario for me where I came to America and kind of forgot about him. I always idolized him, always loved him, and he's an absolute gentleman as well. He's one of those guys that always does interviews, says whatever is on his mind, a bit controversial. But then when you meet him, he's the exact same person. But I remember idolizing him my whole career and then kind of forgetting about him a little bit when I came to America because his style was a little bit different. And then he came to Far Hills and I remember going down to the first hurdle and he was on my inside and just looking across and just kind of getting this flashback of like, how good is he? You know, and he's definitely a rider I've always idolized.
Yeah, he's one of the greats. I mean, he's so quiet, so patient, that empathetic, unbelievable style. When you see, you can go through a race watching him at Cheltenham, you kind of pick out Davy Russell and judge the race on where he is in the race as far as the pace goes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, I've been obviously studying Chosen Mates for him all week and looking at him, you know, when he went on him at Cheltenham in the rehearsal chase and, you know, 20-odd runners at 2 miles, you know, around Cheltenham's very, very sharp. And to see how much confidence he has in a horse sitting fourth or fifth last and, you know, travelling still 9th or 10th coming down the hill and, you know, still fourth or fifth jumping the second last, you know, and just a very, very cool rider. He always knows how much he has underneath him, you know, and a very, very clever guy as well. He's been through a lot in his career in terms of, like, he had the number one job for Giggenstown and he lost it and, you know, he didn't throw the ties out to Pram. He kind of kept plugging away and ended up sort of winning all the big races for Giggenstown anyway, even though Brian Cooper was choosing the wrong horse and things like that. You know, just a lot of things like that. I always look to him and in his career and take a lot away from it. And I think you can apply that to any sport.
Yeah, what was his line? Don't get bitter, get better.
Exactly.
That's Graham Waters. I'll tell you what, if you win two for me tomorrow, I'll be your biggest fan.
I'll be trying, don't worry.
That's Graham Waters.
Another interesting visit. Sean Clancy, Graham Waters. If you missed any of our In the Room segment, simply go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and there is an In the Room page. You can binge listen to all of those that Sean has done. Some fantastic conversations over the past several months. I'll be back after word from the sponsors of this segment, Fanticipate and My Racehorse.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of an offering circulation as part of an offering statement. Qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 Regulation A.
When I return, I'll take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. That segment presented by Lane's End and Keeneland is still to come. I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 17th, we have the Grade 1 E.P. Taylor Stakes and the Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in 5 countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose 2-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Edina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving, and American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Race to the finish line with Letruska. Letruska's 2021 campaign can be summed up in one word: brilliant. Having already earned a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Distaff by virtue of her win in the Ogden Phipps in early June, Letruska arrived at historic Saratoga with her sights set on another win and you're in the Grade 1 Personal Ensign. Not even the Graveyard of Champions could stop her.
They're coming on to the finish. It is Letruska holding on to the lead. Letruska won it by a half length.
Once again, it was Letruska's tremendous heart and will to win which allowed her to add a fourth consecutive Grade 1 victory to her resume. A win which left many wondering if she may be the best horse of any sex in America.
Hi, this is Fausto Gutierrez, Letruska's trainer. I credit Total Control Plus and Performance Builder for her success. It has made her a Grade 1 winner and put her at the top. She looks better every day and is not afraid of any competition. Thank you, Finish Line.
Letruska, fueled by Finish Line.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. This weekend, Santa Anita Park in Arcadia, California, will host the California Flag Stakes, a race for three-year-olds and up at 6.5 furlongs on the turf for a purse of $100,000. And so we look back at the career of California Flag, a California bred who left his mark on the sport with a victory in the 2009 Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint at Santa Anita. California Flag was foaled on February 19, 2004 at the High Card Ranch of Keith and Barbara Card near Murrieta, California. A gray or roan colt, he was a son of Avenue of Flags, a horse who had raced only 3 times in his career but had been runner-up in the Grade 2 Hollywood Juvenile Championship. The colt's mother, Ultra Fleet, had won $0 in 4 career starts but had proved to be a broodmare capable of producing stakes horses. Owner breeder Keith Card was a popular figure in California racing. He was a native of Montana who had served in the Navy during World War II, and he had owned a contracting firm which specialized in building highways and bridges. An owner and breeder of thoroughbred since 1964, he had served as president of both the California Thoroughbred Breeders Association and the California Thoroughbred Farm Managers Association, and was a member of the California Hall of Fame. He and wife Barbara operated a 10-acre ranch, which was known for producing top runners in California from a limited number of foals each year. Barbara once noted that California Flag was a gorgeous horse who, as a youngster, had shown the ability to outrun all of the other babies in the field. As a 2-year-old in 2006, the colt had been consigned to auctions not once but twice in Southern California, but each time he had been withdrawn. Keith and Barbara could not bring themselves to part with him. Instead, they decided to keep him and race him themselves. Even so, the start to California Flag's racing career was less than ideal. Unraced as a juvenile, California Flag finally got to the starting gate at age 3, but was winless in 3 starts. He broke his maiden in February of 2008 at odds of 17-1 on the turf at Santa Anita, but he then lost three consecutive races. At that point, trainer Brian Coroner made a suggestion. He believed that California Flag would do better not as a colt, but as a gelding. And he was correct. Following the routine surgical procedure, California Flag responded by winning three of his next four starts, including the Grade 3 Morbich Stakes on the downhill turf course at Santa Anita. With Joe Talamo as his jockey and at odds of 22-1, California Flag not only won the Morbich Stakes, but set a course record in a time of 1 minute 11.1 seconds. His connections decided he had earned a shot at the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. California Flag was a horse who liked to go to the lead soon after the start. Unfortunately, one of his opponents at that 2008 Breeders' Cup was Mr. Nightlinger, who had the same tendency to run hard and fast as soon as the race began. The two slugged it out that day through a quarter mile in 20.73 seconds and a half mile in 41.81. It was a brutal pace, and it took its toll on both horses. California Flag led with an eighth of a mile to go, but finished 10th. Mr. Nightlinger would fade to 11th. California Flag bounced back a few weeks later at Hollywood Park with a win in the Grade 3 Hollywood Turf Express Handicap, drawing clear by nearly five lengths in a time of 1 minute 8.81 seconds for six furlongs. Coroner then recommended another surgery, this time to remove bone chips from both front ankles. The surgery did wonders. California Flag went to the ranch to relax for the next 9 months. When he returned to the races in August of 2009, he was a different horse. Coroner noted that California Flag had often been anxious, hot, and rambunctious in the paddock when younger, but that after his layoff, he had returned calm and mature. His return to the races was marked with back-to-back victories, including a repeat score in the Morbich as the 8-5 favorite while carrying top weight of 122 pounds. California Flag had earned a return trip to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. This time, there would be no Mr. Nightlinger and no speed duel. With Talamo, just 19 years of age in the irons, California Flag was in control virtually the entire way. Trevor Denman with the call.
They come home and California Flag going away from them. California Flag opens up. Can he keep going now? Delta Storm coming off. Gamely Cannonball down the center of the track. Got to have her running late, but it's all California Flag. California Flag, Joe Talamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life. California Flag has won it.
Send off the 3-1 favorite. California Flag did not disappoint. He was the first Breeders' Cup winner for his owner, trainer, and jockey, and the victory would help propel him to honors as California Turf Champion, and he would share the title of Horse of the Year in the Golden State. California Flag made three more tries at another Breeders' Cup title, but he finished off the board each time. He was retired at the end of 2012 with a record of 11 wins in 27 starts and earnings of nearly $1.3 million. We remember California Flag, and we wish everyone a safe journey in tomorrow's stakes race named in his honor. Please join me again next week when I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
And a reminder, all those segments now available on our website via podcast, horseracingradio.net. Head over and check them out. Some wonderful stories there from Kurt that he has brought your way throughout 2021, and there will be plenty more to come as we make our way down the road to the Breeders' Cup. When I return, it is time to welcome in trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Do not go anywhere. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Catholic boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A six-time graded stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic Boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. collected, bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Join the Maryland Jockey Club for the 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day on Saturday, October 23rd at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. Enjoy a full day of racing with on-track entertainment between the races. It will be fun for all at Laurel Park, Saturday, October 23rd. First post time, 11:30 a.m. Go to laurelpark.com for more information. That's laurelpark.com.
Race to the finish line with Latruska. Latruska's 2021 campaign can be summed up in one word: brilliant. After spending much of the spring and summer training at historic Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky, Latruska would finally have the opportunity to strut her stuff in the afternoon in front of one of the most iconic groups of owners and breeders in the thoroughbred industry. Once again, Latruska embraced the spotlight.
Latruska and Erod Ortiz Jr. to win the Judmont Spinster by 2.5 lengths over Dunbar Road.
That triumph in the Grade 1 Judmont Spinster gave Latruska a remarkable fourth Grade 1 victory this year and catapults her into the Breeders' Cup distaff as the undisputed horse to beat.
Hi, this is Fausto Gutierrez, Latruska's trainer. I credit Total Control Plus and Performance Builder for her success. It has made her a Grade 1 winner and put her at the top. She looks better every day and is not afraid of any competition. Thank you, Finish Line.
Latruska, fueled by Finish Line.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come off the far turn and Turner Loose, the one to catch. Rigby, then Bowman back toward the inside on the ones and twos, is in fourth as they turn for home. Dressed is fifth on the outside. Bowman tries to find an opening to the rail. It is still Turner Loose with the lead. And Diamond Wow alongside with Dress coming from third. Diamond Wow, Dress stacking up outside of Turner Loose. California Angel running late. Diamond Wow, Turner Loose, California Angel coming on the far outside at the wire. Photo for the win. What a finish in the J.P. Morgan Chase Jessamine.
Welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. And guys, I think it's very important on this Saturday morning to point out that today is National Sports Day. So this segment this morning is going to have a bit of a sports theme to it. But I think it may be even more important, especially considering some of the circumstances of the past week and everything that's unfolded in thoroughbred racing, that we point out that tomorrow is National Mulligan Day. So if we completely mess this thing up today, we can get a do-over tomorrow. How about that?
We're not going to mess nothing up. No, we don't need any mulligans. No.
Just hit it right down the middle.
Stand by what I say. If you had rookies in here, you'd have the mulligans.
All right. No ball. Look, when I play golf, and I played for years, I have to take two mulligans and nine. So, and I still shoot 130.
I shoot 77. When I get 77, I quit.
Well, I don't shoot at all, so I'm ahead of the game. If I want to take a walk, I'll go out in the woods.
All right. Well, listen, we just heard that call of California Angel winning the Jessamine Stakes, closed like a freight train under jockey Rafael Bejarano to win that Grade 2 event by a nose at Keeneland on Wednesday. That victory officially brings the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series to a close here in the United States. The final two challenge races for this year's Breeders' Cup are being run later today at Ascot. There were 11 win-and-you're-in races run last weekend, 9 at Keeneland, 2 at Belmont. Which winner was most impressive to you guys? Tim?
You know, there were a heck of a lot of really nice efforts last week. You know, Latruska in the Spinster, I mean, Tis the Bomb breaking through the gate, and then when the Bourbon, following C in the Vosburgh, those would all be worthy to be on the top of my list. But I'm going with Wesley Ward's Averly Jane, who won the Indian Summer the third time she's beaten the boys this year. She just broke out of there like a rocket. And even though that's only been the fourth time for the Indian Summer, the fourth running, I mean, she won it in stakes record time, 102 and 6.65. So, you know, I think that she's going to head to Del Mar with a huge chance to win the juvenile turf sprint, a race that Wesley has won twice already in 2020 and 2019. So Averly Jane is she's now undefeated in four starts, by the way, and that was her first time on the grass. But I think her impressive turn of foot, man, I think she's going to be a monster heading out to California. That's my pick for the race of the last week.
Well, you know, I agree. It's impressive to win any winning you're in. And that makes your life a lot easier going out there. It takes a lot of pressure off of you than having an owner write a big check and going out there and worrying about getting the money back. But I want to say that the Breeders' Futurity, I think, has been under-talked about. I think McPeak's colt ran a huge race. I like a horse that beats a big field. He beat a full field of horses and did it the right way. I think a juvenile going in to this year's Breeders' Cup will benefit from being able to sit off the pace and come running. There's going to be a lot of speed in the race, as there always is. I thought he was impressive. I think he's going to California in good form. I watch him train in the mornings. So I think he's the real deal.
Dale, it's interesting. You've had so much success in that Breeders' Futurity over the years. Forget about Breeders' Cup, but looking ahead to the first Saturday in May next year, why is that such an important stepping stone to what could be Derby success in 2022 for those horses?
Well, it's obviously it's the only outside of Breeders' Cup grade 1 2-year-old race in Kentucky. And like I said, it seems like it always has a full field of horses. 13 horses showed up the other day. And I think that it's really important to have a horse going on the Derby preps that has proven he can beat a big field. Because in a big field, you're going to have to overcome some adversity. And whoever wins that race every year seems like they do, and they do it the right way.
Yeah, interesting take. Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin. This is I Ask, They Answer. That's topic one. Let's move on to topic number two, guys. This past week, legislators in New York sent legislation to Governor Kathy Hochul, which would end a current law in New York, which mandated that horses in the same race, which are trained or ridden by a spouse, a parent, or member of a jockey's household, have to run as a coupled entry. That is no longer going to be the case once this new legislation is signed into law, which is expected to happen. Good move on the part of legislators in the Empire State. What do you think?
Excellent move. I'll take this one first, Tim. Excellent move. Need to be done. You know, you're betting in the simulcast up there. You can go to Saratoga and bet on Kentucky where that rule is not in place through the window, but you can't at your own racetrack. And in this business we're in, there's so many conflicts of interest. This is a carnival atmosphere. So many people are either married or cousins or brothers or fathers, sons, daughters, mothers. I'll tell you a quick story. Tammy rode against me one time here at Churchill, and she tried to put my horse over the fence trying to come through on the inside. And next, we did get through and beat her, though, and I own part of the horse. She tried to put my investment right over the fence. She said, you should have ridden me. But we got called into the stewards, and they said, no more. She can't ride against you. I said, we're not even married. She said, oh, but you cohabitate. The next day, my friend Greg Foley entered in a race I was entering in. We did it on purpose, and she showed up on the overnight riding against me. Called us back in, and I just stood in front of the stewards. I said, you son of a bitches. She left me and took the kids. She'd rather ride for Greg than live with me. They threw us out, and she kept riding against me.
Well, I thought it was just an insane rule to begin with. I mean, you're looking at, you know, if people are you going to say then that the Ortiz brothers, every time they're in a race, they have to be the same odds? How would that work out with the betting public? You know, that's just a stupid, stupid rule. And I couldn't believe when they did it to begin with. And, you know, I know it started with Trevor McCarthy and Katie Davis. And, you know, these people are trying to make a livelihood. I mean, that's just you're taking away what they want to do when they have to be, have a coupled entry like that. It was just a stupid rule. And I'm glad that Kathy Hochul has already shown that I think she's going to be a friend to racing. Cuomo wasn't really, he never really liked horse racing, but I think she does. She understands the importance of it, and I think she's doing the right thing on this one.
Tim, why is it taking them so long to make this change? Is it only because of what we saw with Katie Davis and with Trevor McCarthy?
Well, I think so. There's been a lot of other things going on in the government up here. that's probably slowed things down too. But, you know, I just think that the fact that it is being done now, it shows that they're on the right track as far as racing. And I just hope that as we go forward, things get better and better with racing with the new regime running the state up here.
I would think there's probably nobody even realized it was a rule for the longest time. And then somebody dug it up with those two riding against one another. I bet you could go back in time and see where the rule was violated many times in different ways. But at least when they figured it out they need to fix it. And it got fast-tracked and through.
Yeah, moral of the story there. Dale, make sure you're giving Tammy a leg up moving forward here, my friend.
Exactly. She's still here, by the way.
All right. Today, as I mentioned, is indeed National Sports Day. So these next couple of topics are going to tie into that theme. How about this one, guys? Mattress Mac, Jim McInvale, is back in the sports headlines after placing his latest big bet on his hometown Houston Astros to win the World Series. In June, Mattress Mac bet $3.25 million on the Astros to win the World Series. This included a $2 million bet placed on the William Hill app, which is owned by Caesars Sportsbook. And the reason I mentioned that is because if the Astros win the whole thing, which, by the way, they are currently favored to do so, Mac's total payout is going to be $35.6 million, and the $22 million he would win on his $2 million bet, which he placed with William Hill, would reportedly be the largest single payout on a bet in U.S. history. So I ask you guys, has Mattress Mac completely lost his mind, or is he some sort of, I don't know, mad genius?
Well, if you got the money, why not spend it? I mean, he's got the money, obviously, to make these bets. I mean, I guess there's some madness to it, but if he wins, he is a genius. I mean, I just wish I had that kind of money to throw around on a sports bet. More power to him. Let him keep betting. He's got the money. Let him go ahead and do it.
Hey, gambling ain't no fun unless you bet more than you can afford to lose. And I'm sure he has to bet a whole lot to get a rush. So kudos to a man that backs his home team.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing too is, you know, I wonder what he was going through his mind when the Astros were beating the drums, as we all know they were doing a couple of years back.
Yeah, he lost, wasn't it, $13 million after he bet the Astros to win the 2019 World Series?
And that's the next day that mattress went up 20%.
Yeah, there is some other side of this story where he's hedging it against a promotion that he has going on at his mattress stores in Texas.
That was just a kick in the can for him, though.
Yeah.
The money he's got. You know, I think it's kind of refreshing, and people are interested in it. And if people are saying, oh, they're getting down on him for doing that, the heck with them. I mean, it's his money. He can do what he wants with it.
I love gamblers. They're never happy. They're always trying to make the next score. They're the best.
Yeah. So yeah, you got the line of the day so far. Gambling ain't no fun if you can't bet more than you can afford to lose.
Right,
think about
right.
That. That's pretty deep. All right.
Yeah, exactly. Think about it.
Moving on, topic number four. This, you know, you think about it, this weekend, this time of year is such a great time to be a sports fan. It's a weekend that's loaded with major sporting events across the board. In college football this afternoon, the number one ranked Georgia Bulldogs are taking on the number 11 ranked and undefeated University of Kentucky Wildcats. That's a big deal here in the Bluegrass. Georgia is favored by about 22.5 points. If this were a match race between two horses currently in training, which horse would be Georgia and which horse would you say would be Kentucky? Tim, you want it first?
Yeah. I guess, you know, Georgia has to be the horse that everyone expects to win, right? So I would say I'm going to take my Georgia team is going to be Nick's Go. He's supposed to win. And my Kentucky is going to be a team that maybe isn't getting the respect maybe it should be getting. And I'm going to take Maxfield and put him in that position because Maxfield's a horse that always shows up. I mean, he doesn't – he's got seven wins and 10 starts, 2 seconds in the third. He's always in the mix. And I think that on his best day, he might be able to turn the tables on Nixco in the Classic, especially if this speed duel develops. So, you know, Maxfield will be my Kentucky to Nixco's Georgia.
Tim just stole my thunder. I put a lot of thought into it, too. And that's a good analogy. So since Tim stole my thunder, I'm going to go back in time and not worry about horses racing today and say Georgia is American Pharoah and Kentucky is Keen Ice on Travers Day. Go Cats.
I thought you were going to say that anyway. I thought you were going to break the rules and go that way.
I like to break rules.
Well, we know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we all know that Georgia did not fare well on Travers Day in 2015.
Exactly. So standing here in the bluegrass cheering on the Cats.
All right. Well, there you go. Go Cats.
No, I'm not going. That's too. That's a madhouse over there. Mike, you ever go to the games? You right there in town?
I used to be a season ticket holder to UK football. But I'm not anymore, but I used to be. They're a lot of fun. Of course, today's game is at Georgia, so you have to go between the hedges down there in Athens. But we'll certainly be tuned in. The problem is it's a 3:30 Eastern start, and, of course, we've got Keeneland going on. Dale, you'll be working. You got a couple of horses at Keeneland today, Officer Nick and Cabana Time. How about either of those two horses? Do they turn into Georgia later today for you?
We'll see what happens with the turf. If we can stay on the turf, I think they'll move way up. Neither one of them have run well on the dirt, but hopefully we stay on the turf and they run big. But we'll be keeping an eye on the score. Very proud of Kentucky football this year. They're unbelievable. Start out 6-0 like they have and win as many SEC games. Hats off to the coach. He's great.
Well, they just beat LSU, didn't they?
They just thumped on LSU, yeah.
Yep. All right, well, listen, I think – next week, we've gotten such great feedback on this segment, and I know that a lot of listeners who tune into this I Ask, They Answer segment each and every week would love to be able to ask questions of you guys. So I think starting next week, we will put it out there on social media, on our HRN Twitter account, that folks can send us a question that they would like the two of you to debate, the two of you to answer for them. And it'll be our HRN wildcard question of the morning. And we'll wrap up these segments with that question from our listeners each and every Saturday morning. I think that would be a lot of fun. What do you think?
Sounds good to me, but I hope we have somebody sifting through them pretty good.
Yeah, we'll choose the one we like.
Right, exactly.
Well,
one week though, we ought to just have a wild card. You got to answer whatever's asked.
I think we should do that every time.
All right.
Yeah.
If people take the time to make a question up, we'll answer it.
There's some things I might not want to answer though.
And if they don't like the answers, that's too bad.
All right, Tim.
Dale, when are you legging Tammy up? There's a question for you.
Yeah. She keeps talking about $127,000 maiden race, and she might go back to riding in November.
Yeah, I can't blame her. The money's fantastic.
No, I am kidding. That ain't happening. We got two kids, and it's too dangerous. But she won a lot of races and had a good career as a jockey. She was way ahead of her time, a female rider in Kentucky. But, yeah, it'd be nice if she was riding right now with the purses where they are.
Yeah, Tammy Fox, for those of you who don't know who we're talking about there, just a really good rider. All right, guys, that'll do it for today. We're back next week, another brand-new edition, I Ask, They Answer. It'll be the same time. It'll be 10:30 Eastern. And good luck, Dale. Appreciate it. And, Timmy, good luck at the windows.
Thanks, fellas. Talk to you later.
See you later.
All right. I Ask, They Answer, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. And by the way, if you missed any of those particular segments, all you have to do is go to our website. A podcast of these shows is available for you each and every week. You can go back and listen to all of them right from the very beginning. I Ask, They Answer, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. They'll join me at 10:30 Eastern every single Saturday morning here on the Equine Forum. Don't miss next week's edition. And don't forget to weigh in on that question that we're going to put out there on our social media. If you have a question, by the way, and you don't do social media, and you want Dale and Tim to debate a certain topic, if you want them to answer and talk about something that's going on in the world of racing, you can email me, Mike@horseracingradio.net. That's another way to do it. And, of course, weigh in on social media. If you do have a Twitter account or a Facebook account, you can go to @HRN Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. All right, I'm back to wrap it up right after this. It's the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
He flew fighter jets in two wars and taught you how to drive a car. He fed everyone on the block but never shared his secret recipes. And every time he'd tell a story, he'd own the room. But now more than ever, he may feel alone. Today, older adults and their loved ones are struggling to connect in a time when connection has never been more important. But there is something we can do. Embrace our older loved ones through StoryCorps Connect. With StoryCorps Connect, you can honor seniors remotely with an interview about their life. Every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history, so that years from now, future generations can listen in.
All right, Grandpa, what's one piece of advice you have for me?
Just three words, sweetheart. Live with courage.
The man that had the best stories still has plenty of stories to tell. So connect virtually and share the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. Connect, honor, share. StoryCorps Connect. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Don't forget that you won't want to miss any coverage of the fall racing, including the Breeders' Cup, like only Blood Horse Daily can bring you. Follow the races and news throughout the day on the popular Blood Horse Daily app, or have an email sent to you once a day. Both are free. You can be part of the widest-reaching news platform. All you have to do is go to bloodhorse.com/daily to learn more and to get hooked up there. Fantastic stuff from Bloodhorse. Poll question today. It's more of a question of the day than a poll question. Which Breeders' Cup contender has impressed you the most going into this year's event? I told you, for me, it's Blowout, the winner of the First Lady at Keeneland, going wire to wire against a quality field. That's very difficult to do at Keeneland on that turf course. So for me, it's Blowout. Folks are chiming in, so many of you, and saying Latruska, Nick's Go, for example, another one that's getting some respect. Mark sends an email. Latruska certainly have one that, Latruska. Look, Latruska has just been, so Kurt Becker said Latruska too when he joined me in the first hour of the program. She's just been brilliant. So I can see why people are saying that. I went for a little bit of a off-the-wall type of thing with Blowout, but I find Blowout to be ultra-impressive. And I think she's going to be a handful when she gets to Del Mar. Another email from a listener, and don't forget, you can always email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. I just asked Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin in this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer, if this was a match race between horses, which horse would be number one, Georgia? Which horse would be number 11, Kentucky? And we have a listener that sends an email that says Georgia would be Nick's go, Kentucky would be Medina's spirit. Interesting. All right, my thanks to all of our guests for being here this morning on what has been a busy 3 hours. Kurt Becker kicked off the show at 8:15. Robert Geller from Woodbine was here at 8:40. That was a great conversation about a huge day at Woodbine tomorrow. Don't forget the Grade 1 EP Taylor, the Grade 2 Nearctic part of that Sunday card. You heard our Unsung Heroes segment presented by Claiborne. That was Jeff Powell, the Keeneland starter. Really fascinating comments and insight from Jeff about what goes on with the starting gate crew and their interaction with the horses and with the jockeys. You want to go back and listen to that on our website. Neil Pessin went down the road to the Breeders' Cup. He talked about his talented runner, Bell's the One. Sean Clancy went in the room with Graham Waters. Kurt Becker, my thanks to him for his stroll through racing history. And, of course, Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin for I Ask, They Answer. If you missed any portion of this show, any of the segments, head back and listen. HorseRacingRadio.net. You can listen at your leisure. And, of course, follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Back next week with another brand new edition, but we kick it all off Wednesday with a new trainer talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Visit our site for a complete weekly schedule. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling all of our social media here this morning, I'm Mike Pennant. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. And in the meantime, go Steelers.